The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
This episode of Wrestling Night in Canada is dedicated to the memories of Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt.
You're listening to Wrestling Night in Canada on the Shining Wizards Network with your hosts, Matt Copper, Dustin Maruca, and Snowy White.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another exciting episode of Wrestling Night in Canada. I'm Snowy White.
I'm Matt Copper.
I'm Dustin Maruca.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Oh, well, we have a marathon today, don't we? It's our first episode in over a month, and we just got all the news for you today. Past week in a bit.
That's kind of the weird thing because, like you said, it's been a little bit since we last sat down and did this.
Yep.
But everything all sort of happened at once.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty normal week. In the world of wrestling where, in a week, everything's old news, but so much stuff has happened this past week and a half. and even beyond that.
There's still going to be some fallout that we're kind of wait and see.
Yeah,
and all that. So, we got some buds going. We got some hard ass lemonade going, and all that. And it's going to be a really good time to sit down and discuss everything that's going on in the world of professional wrestling. And I guess as we normally do, we always like to start off. Normally, when someone passes away, especially if it was someone, from the old territory days, I would just give my quick little, who this person was for the younger audience, and this is why he was so important, and all of that. But we decided, Terry Funk, Bray Wyatt, really, he was huge.
Yeah.
This isn't just some jobber from a territory in 1976.
No, it's
this is actually huge.
A legend and a currently, or like up until
would have been a future legend. So we decided, it would just, if we did the turnbuckle talk, I think that would do both of these guys justice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of save it for that. So, but I kind of, I guess the big things though, is the two pay-per-views, not premium live events, no bullshit or anything like that.
There's one PLEs. Of those the weekend coming up as we're speaking. Though.
Yeah, as we're speaking on Tuesday, Tuesday, August 29th, we've just finished watching All In and NWA 75. Next weekend we got WWE Payback and AEW All Out. So it's on
All Out already.
Yeah, the week after.
A week later.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's like
just to fuck with our schedule.
I suppose.
Why.
Yeah. It's like
damn it, Tony Khan.
I mean, maybe doing All In instead of All Out this year would have been a good idea. But who am I?
Or save fucking All Out for November or something.
Maybe, but no. You got to do full gear. You can't break with the schedule. But either way.
Yeah.
Either way.
Not that I'm arguing, because unfortunately I didn't see All In because of the time schedule, it being in London, it's starting at noon, and what do the kids call it today? Adulting?
Yeah.
I think that's a word
now. That is a thing, yes.
I had some of that to do.
Yeah.
So by the time I got here to watch it with you guys, it's like...
It was over.
Sorry.
It was over.
just missed it.
It was all over.
Hey, I'm on my way. Yeah,
okay,
coming out.
I guess I'm going to go home and watch 5.5 hours of NWA 75.
Well, we had to watch five. Well, I guess Dustin and everyone else didn't get here until after the main show had already pretty much started.
Yeah, 10 minutes before the main show.
Yeah, so we caught I watched the pre-show myself. That was 2 hours. So that started at 10 in the morning, which on a Sunday is just why is this even a thing? But
why am I awake?
Yeah, I had to get up and eat breakfast and watch wrestling.
priorities.
Yep.
But not in your footy pajamas.
Surprised I wasn't in my pajamas still.
Might as well have been.
I was drinking coffee and eating peanut butter toast though. So
yeah.
There we are. Are you guys Okay, this would be before your time, Ducky, but Matt, do you remember Saturday morning cartoons?
Of course.
Okay. Did you kind of get that, or at least Saturday morning wrestling?
A little, yeah. Like, I never had Saturday morning wrestling, but I had WCW Saturday night when that was still a thing on TBS.
Right.
But, yeah. Right. But, no, Sunday morning cartoons were definitely a thing for me when I would wake up and be like, this is the way to start the weekend, and then, but unfortunately, as soon as they were over, yeah, I had to go outside.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he is wearing a Who Framed Roger Rabbit shirt.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm too old to grow up now, but.
Yeah.
Well, I was just wondering if maybe you had the same vibe watching wrestling at noon as maybe you did when you were a kid.
Quite similar. Like, if there ever comes a time when we all watch, like, a New Japan event here where we all have to get here for, like, 6 in the morning. I'll definitely be eating a bowl of cereal when that happens.
Show up in our pajamas. Let's go.
Yeah, literally.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch watching the first match.
Hell yeah.
Holy jeez.
Big old bowl of Fruit Loops.
Yep. Yeah.
There we are. There we are. Yeah. Yeah. None of this healthy cereal. Like, what's the point of that? Yeah. So I figure, okay, now is a good time to kind of jump right into All In.
Time to go all in.
Get Mr. Cobber to do your usual magic.
What, are you booing me for my puns?
Yes.
Come on. Oh, come on.
Boo.
Okay. So, starting off the night, we actually did include pre-show matches on these ones because they were important. They were both for championships, so kind of had to.
Okay, yeah.
And the first match of the night was Adam Cole and MJF, who are facing each other in the main event. So this whole thing was bookended with Adam Cole and MJF,
mm-hmm.
in a way. So, mm-hmm. yeah, and it was also important to watch this just to see the results, just to see how it would tie in to later. So, yeah, I thought it was a good idea to include all of it. So anyway, Adam Cole and MJF were challenging Aussie Open, who are Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, for the Ring of Honor tag team titles. Didn't go very long, and honestly, probably for the best, since they probably didn't want to take the risk of injuring Adam Cole or MJF and ruining their main event.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, but I would have hoped that Aussie Open would have got a better showing out of this, because I know how good of a tag team they are.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of just seemed like they got a bit squashed. Like, they got a bit of offense in, but for the most part, it's like not a typical Aussie Open match you would see in Ring of Honor or New Japan or elsewhere. It was just, it was definitely showcased. Like, they got taken out as, like, with the double clothesline as a finishing move. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Holy jeez.
Like, I didn't think that would happen. I think they would hit the double clothesline and then MJF or Adam Cole would do their respective finishing moves to them later or after the fact, but nope. Double clothesline took out Aussie Open, and MJF and Adam Cole are your new Ring of Honor tag team champions.
Would that be the only thing Jim Cornette likes about AEW? Is that a double clothesline won a match?
Well, the fact that they're, like, purposely making fun of it, I think he's aware of that, so yeah. I don't think so.
Chair went across the room a few
times. Probably, yeah. So, like, bit of a weird decision. Like, I don't know. Like, I was kind of on the fence about it. I'm just like, I mean, cool, but, like, now it's, like, makes me wonder, what if they do, like, what does it mean for the main event now? It's like, do they turn each other? Do they not? They're tag team champions now. I don't know. Like, where is this all going? Where is this going?
Right.
I don't
know. See, that when you said, like, do they turn on one another? Like, that's kind of what I was anticipating this match to be. It was going to be more of a build towards the main event. Someone is going to do something to the other,
or it would be and it would come off as an accident, and then,
right,
yeah,
yeah, some sort of thing, because I noticed that is now a wrestling trope.
The accidental costing someone the title, and then but then it turned out to be all intentional.
We have this title match, but first we have this tag team match, and well, you know how that's gonna end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's to push the story along, and that's what I was anticipating. But no, I guess not.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, I was taken a bit aback by the fact that they won. I was like, well, that's I don't know. Like, I don't anticipate it being a long reign, but I guess we'll see.
Will Aussie Open take them next weekend?
Maybe. Who knows? I don't even know what the world title match is gonna be at All Out now. Like, we all I thought I knew what it was going to be, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Anyway, next up we had Jack Perry defending the FTW title against Hook in an FTW rules match. Jack Perry came out in a limousine, which, well, factored into the match quite a bit, and also into some of the backstage politics that we're going to talk about later.
Geez.
So, yeah, Hook just ran up onto the stage when Perry got out of his limo. They started fighting on the limousine, but there was actually a pretty cool spot where Perry had Hook on the hood of the car, and he, like, did a rolling thunder over the length of the limousine and then onto Hook, which actually looked really good. This is taking a page out of RVD's book. But then after he did that, he looked straight into the camera, slapped the windshield, and said, "That's real glass. Cry me a river." Now, if you didn't know, a couple weeks prior, Jack Perry wanted to do a spot involving real glass on Collision. CM Punk confronted him about that, saying, "We don't do that on Saturdays. If you want to do that, go on TV on Wednesdays." So apparently Jack Perry took that to heart. Wow. So that was him kind of just looking into the camera and just basically telling CM Punk, "Go fuck yourself."
Mm-hmm. Well, and then, didn't take shit like his dad did either. So
And then, of course, immediately after he said that, Hook threw Jack Perry right into the windshield. The real glass.
The real glass.
The real glass.
Luke Perry probably looked down. That's my boy.
Yeah. But, they brawled around the floor area for a little bit, and then eventually they got in the ring. Hook got him in the Red Rum, or which is the Taz mission for those who don't know.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Hook's okay. Hook's dad's Taz. You know,
Taz. Yeah. The Oompa Loompa.
For those who are unaware. But oh God. Yeah, the got him in the Red Rum.
If he heard that, I'm dead.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. But yeah, Hook got Perry in the Red Rum. Perry tapped out. He didn't pass out. He straight up tapped out. So Hook is once again your FTW champion. And yeah, the title did not get retired like Perry said it was going to be on Collision the day prior. So
that's actually kind of surprising, because I thought I heard the scuttlebutt that Hook was actually going to the Performance Center.
Really?
Yeah. Like I don't know. Maybe I was on dope that day. I don't know.
For WWE?
Yeah.
No, he's still very much with AEW.
Oh, okay.
You're not thinking Brian Pillman.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I know he's now showing up there.
No, WWE had interest in Hook, obviously, because he's like, people were like, the internet was buzzing about him for a while. So they obviously showed interest, but I guess ultimately he decided to stay like in AEW. Like he's doing pretty well for himself there. He's only got one loss on his record, and like his dad's there to help him along. So
Okay, cool.
But yeah, thus ends the pre-show. Now to start the main show proper, it started off with CM Punk.
Old Bitter Man Punk.
defending the Real World's Championship against Samoa Joe. So this, what is this now? The fifth match between Samoa Joe and Punk?
Yeah. Fifth one, yeah.
Gotta say, like, even though it wasn't like a technical masterpiece, it was still a pretty good match.
Yeah.
And like, ironically, after the whole glass incident, Punk ended up blading himself, what, like 5 minutes into the match after getting thrown into the announce table. So
I wish Joe would have bounced him off the apron first.
Yeah, but
talk some sense into him.
But yeah, the London crowd initially cheered Punk when he came out, but they kind of started to turn on him a little bit. You could hear the boos start growing as
that one sign was great. Best in the world at being a bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually saw that, like, trying to watch highlights on the YouTube, and then I saw that on the YouTubes. And yeah, I saw that sign. I'm like, oh God. Here we go.
Yeah, but like, for the most part, the match was pretty good. Punk got really bloody. They did the... At one point, Joe tried to do the walk away, like the nope, I guess it's called, where someone comes off the top rope and he just walks away and they just land on the mat. He tried doing that to Punk at one point, but Punk, like, faked him out and got him anyway. But then Punk tried to do it to the outside, but then, yeah.
He landed straight on his hip.
Yeah, straight on his hip. Yeah, Joe just walked away and, yeah. Course, nope.
And then we were just making jokes. Oh, he's injured again.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and how both Samoa Joe and CM Punk are now both injury prone. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate to say it, yeah, but
well, yeah, yeah, they're not sprint like okay. They're still
they're both in their
youngish.
They're yeah mid to late 40s, but yeah, they've been doing this for over 20 years. So
and you know,
and even though CM Punk had a 7-year break,
yeah,
that's like
they're not sprint chickens.
He gets hurt every
anymore.
Match.
Uh huh.
No, I see what some of these older guys doing, and I'm like, man, sometimes I grunt and groan just getting out of the car.
Yeah.
You know,
and then you watch fucking TCO, and it's like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he's, like, jumping on cement on purpose on his head.
Yeah, that's another guy. He's 3 days older than Dirt, too, PCO. look at some of the shit he does, too. It's like, you guys are crazy.
Like the stupid malfunction thing he does where he suicide dives to the floor on purpose.
Wow.
Oh, there's no one there. I'm going to go light on my face. Bye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All and right. Then he was lit on fire a few weeks ago. His bully Ray poured battery acid on him and lit him on fire.
Okay, all right.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Can that not be attempted murder?
Are we actually going to gloss over battery acid?
Like you just said that so nonchalant.
Yeah.
But anyway.
With the deathmatch shit I watch, you knew I would say that.
Okay, or not anyways, I guess. Yeah. But anyways, the match end, or I should say when the crowd started to turn on CM Punk, he did 4 out of John Cena's 5 moves of doom to Samoa Joe. And then he did the Hulk Hogan leg drop on Samoa Joe.
When he basically sat
on Joe's head. Went for the pin. Joe kicks out at 1, turns the Hulk up around on Punk, gets up and does the finger points on him, and even says, "You!"
That's where we all popped. We're like, do the thing. And then we're like, yeah, okay, we don't care anymore.
Yeah.
We're just like, yeah, okay, chips.
Yeah.
Wow.
But in the end... Punk got the win because he hit the Pepsi plunge on Joe from the top rope and then got the pinfall and the win and retains, in quotations, the real world's championship, also in quotations. But
what is that?
It's the belt that Punk, because last year at All Out, Punk won the world title, got suspended, but was stripped of it. And then they had the tournament, Moxley won it, and then MJF won it from Moxley.
Right.
And here we are.
Okay.
And, yeah.
And then he put an X on it, so it's like the new X Division champion.
So when he came back after however long on the first episode of Collision, he had a bag with him, and it was pretty clear what was in the bag from the get-go, but a couple...
It was Damian.
Yeah.
it was a snake.
Yeah, but... couple episodes of Collision down the line, he finally did the big reveal, and it's like we all knew it was the world title that he never lost, because as we all know, MJF has the Triple B, the big Burberry belt. He doesn't have the original AEW world title, so Punk still had that one somehow, even though he got stripped of it. I don't know, but so he's going around claiming that nobody ever pinned or submitted him for this title, so he is the real AEW world's champion. And he took a can of spray paint and spray painted a big old X down the middle, and everyone thought there was some symbolism to it because the X went right through the E, which was for the Elite. But I mean, how else would he have spray painted an X through it? But I don't know. I think people are just overthinking it.
Yeah, I think a little too much there.
But who knows? Punk is a petty motherfucker.
It's just some wrestling fans are in serious need of kissing a girl.
Like, yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay.
Anyway, we'll get back to CM Punk after we're done here, because we got some. It's that time of year, you know. So we'll talk about him in a bit. Next up was a 6-man tag team match. It was Bullet Club Gold, which was Juice Robinson and Jay White and Konosuke Takeshita, accompanied by Don Callis and the Gun Club. Jesus, a lot of people involved in this. Versus the Golden Elite, which is Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, and Hangman Adam Page. This, I was kind of like, why is Kenny Omega in a 6-man tag team match in an 80,000 seat arena?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but like when the very next week they're going to be doing Takeshita versus Omega in a 1-on-1 match at All Out in Chicago. But like, why not have that in Wembley in London where the fans are going to go crazy? But I don't know. Either way, it was a good match. I was entertained by it. Like, could have just been on a random episode of Dynamite, but
I was sports entertainer.
Yeah. But you figured after all these V triggers that Kenny would be hitting on the guys, and then he gets fucking rolled up. He gets beat by a surprise roll up by Takeshita.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, like a surprise roll up. That's very WWE of you. But so I guess I liked everything except for the ending, I guess you could say. But also weird choice having, like, when Punk's going back through the curtain, who's standing there, Kenny Omega and Hangman Adam Page. Seems like a whole lot of bad planning on someone's part. You know, not going to name any names, but yeah. Definitely, I definitely thought that the Golden Elite were going to pull out the win on this one, but no, the Bullet Club did.
The Bang Bang Gang?
The Bang Bang Gang, yep. The BCG, etc. Yeah, and next up we had, in my opinion, was match of the night. I always love seeing FTR and the Bucks in matches.
Fear the Revolver.
Oh yeah, that was the greatest sign of the night was when right in the middle of the hard cam, it was like Fear the Revolver. If you weren't aware of what Cash Wheeler had gone through involving his legal issues leading up to this, which like really put this match in jeopardy. But yeah, he had a bit of a traffic altercation with someone, and he pulled out a gun.
Pulled
a fucking gun out on them.
Glock Wheeler.
Yeah.
America.
Fuck.
But
he can team with Arn Anderson now.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
The Glockbusters.
Well, no, isn't FTR, weren't they heavily inspired by the Midnight Express? The
Brainbusters.
The Brainbusters. So that's one more thing.
So yep. Arn can come manage them again?
Maybe.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, change the Shatter Machine to the Glockbuster. Well,
Tully was their manager at first.
Right, it was Tully, yeah. Not Arn.
Yeah.
Gotta be Arn now.
Yeah.
He's due now, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, aside from the Fear the Revolver sign, which, yeah, cracked me up pretty hard.
That was great.
It was, but I'm just glad that this match was able to happen because there was questions of whether or not it would, given the whole legal situation with Wheeler. But yeah, the judge never seized his passport, and he was able to make it over to London, and they had a great match, and like surprisingly FTR retained.
Yeah.
I thought for sure because of the whole legal thing they were going to get punished and put it on the Bucks, but
just a WWE DUI situation. Jey Uso.
Yeah, or Jimmy back, Uso. Yeah.
One of them. Yeah. The day they come back, oh, let's put the belts on them.
Yeah.
Have them hold them for 2 years.
Well, hey, they had that bloodline story they had to play out.
Yeah.
Which was so good. Yeah. So Wheeler can pull out a gun on someone.
Yeah.
And no problem. Which, okay, fine. I'm not bitching about that. But what Ducky and I do with the Ninja Cat production, okay, putting on local, you know, metal shows here and all that, we have to go through all the crap that some band member from the U.S. had a DUI 7 years ago or something. Still can't get into Canada.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, it's because technically he was never convicted of anything. So maybe that had something to do with it. But
maybe, yeah.
Or maybe Tony Khan used his deep pockets to influence the...
Maybe he pulled the...
Starting to think that.
Pulled the Jimmy Uso.
Maybe.
24 hours.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Who knows? But
yeah,
nevertheless, it was a great match.
I'm still gonna bitch about it.
Yeah, it was a great match, and I was still entertained. But I'm surprised by the outcome. I'll just say that.
Yeah, okay.
Next up, we had the Stadium Stampede match.
This was actually good.
Yeah, not. It was very much. It was a lot more like Anarchy in the Arena, and not like the Stadium Stampedes that we got during the pandemic. But yeah, it was just guys fighting all around where they could access in the stadium.
Mox bled in 2 minutes.
Of course.
We didn't see it happen. They just turned the camera, and it's like, and all of a sudden he's, okay, he's shit. Bloody.
There he is.
and he's here.
Yeah, and, I got to say, that spot that Moxley had with the skewers, that when they just, like, they were stuck in his head, and then they fell, and then they were just hanging there.
It was the whole thing of skewers.
Yeah, I got to be honest, I winced at that. That was a bit too much for me.
I was like, a skewer spot, okay, half of them are going to fall out, and they all stayed in.
Yeah, they all stayed in. Like, I'm surprised he didn't bleed out from that. But no, I
the top of the head is like so soft too, so it could just easily just
Yeah.
And in.
I'm surprised he didn't bleed more than he did, but I'm not a doctor. So
because Moxley's soft spot on his head never fully developed.
I guess.
The one who bled the most was probably Orange Cassidy. Mox went at him with a fork real good.
Yeah. Yeah, Orange. I also I'm disappointed that Orange didn't get a one-on-one match in Wembley too. Yeah. But
when Sue came out in the van, fucking Shivani, it's Sue.
It's Sue. Yeah.
Instead of it's Sting. So good. No.
Yeah, but well, we didn't even say who was in all these matches. There was Eddie Kingston, Penta El Zero Miedo, Chuck Taylor, Trent Beretta, and Orange Cassidy faced off against John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Wheeler Yuta, Mike Santana, as he's being called now, not just Santana, Mike Santana, and Ortiz. So, yeah. I like how they kind of played up like a bunch of little mini feuds in this. Like they kept on playing into the fact that Orange Cassidy has been defending his title so much that he's like legitimately injured and hurting. And at one point during the match, he couldn't do the orange punch because he was just couldn't do it. So he resorted to a little, you know, Taipei, wrapped his hand
in reverse tape.
Yeah. And duct
then just
tape.
Had like a bucket and we're like, what the fuck is that? And then he pulled a beer bottle out of it and he smashed it in the bucket and put his hand in.
Yeah. Hmm. And then
Mox hit him and ruined it.
Yeah, but eventually he was able to... Eventually...
Yeah, he orange punched him with it.
Eventually he was able to orange punch Claudio.
With it, yeah.
And for a while it looked like Claudio was like legit knocked out, but obviously he was just working because he did that like tense up thing that guys do when they get like legitimately knocked out. Yeah.
He just did the, that's actual glass, don't sell it.
Yeah, but...
That was cool. And then Mox just went, fuck the glass, and just threw it.
Yeah, that was also fucked up. I was just like, oh my god. Like,
Mox
yeah.
just went, nah, land on this 1,000 times.
That's another thing that I don't like about deathmatch wrestling is all the glass. It just makes me uncomfortable. Because, like, glass is hard to get out. Much harder to get out than thumbtacks, I will say that.
Uh-huh. Like, we've had them in our shoe a time or two.
Yeah, I don't like it. It scares me. Like, even seeing guys roll around in broken glass on TV, I'm just like, why?
Yeah. Well, that's not my idea of a good time.
No, it's like, and that's another, this is what I'm saying, is like the shower afterwards would just be the worst. Like, like you'd have to do hot water to try and open the wounds, but still, like, does the glass go in further? Or like, I don't know, but.
You got someone to sit there and pull it out?
Yeah, and also there was a part of this match where Penta was taken out and injured, and he was taken to the back. But then he came back out in a different outfit, and he was Penta Oscuro. So, you know, he was more powerful, I guess. He was Penta.
We're like, whose music is this?
Oh, it's Penta.
He disappeared?
Yeah.
We're just like, huh?
We didn't even realize at first, but yeah, he was taken to the back, and then he came back out as Penta. He came out initially as Penta El Zero Miedo, got taken out, and then came back out as Penta Oscuro. So
Eddie Kingston went nuts with a barbed wire chair, though.
Yeah, he did. And also there
right
was,
for Claudio.
And also
fuck
there was
fucking.
But also there was that spot between Santana and Penta that went horribly wrong because the ladder broke underneath them when he tried to flip over it. But eventually they got it done.
That could have went way worse than it did.
Could have, but they weren't using a proper wrestling ladder. They were using a painter's ladder.
They probably found that in the back.
Probably, yeah.
Tony, I need my $30.
Probably belonged to the janitor who works at Wembley. But
yeah.
He went to the office yesterday and was like, fuck!
Yeah. Where the fuck's my ladder? I was Australian. What the fuck am I going to do? Yeah.
Well, Wembley's in Australia now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Australia was just a British prison, so.
Yeah. That's...
Not wrong.
So, the Australian accent is just British convict, I guess. If you think about it.
I go fight the kangaroo.
Anyway, next up, we had the Fatal 4-Way for the AEW Women's World Championship. Hikaru Shida defending against Saraya, Toni Storm, and Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. This match didn't go as long as I thought it would.
No.
But the entire thing was mainly... I kind of feel bad for Shida. Because, like, I'll just say right now, as you, probably everyone knows, Saraya won. It was her moment in front of her.
Yeah.
Yeah, her big
and then
title
the
win.
Outcasts are split.
Yeah. But that seemed to be the whole focus of the match was the Outcasts, like, disbanding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so Shida just gets this hot potato title victory and doesn't even get pinned in the match to lose it. Like, thanks for coming, I guess. Yeah. Like,
thank you, come again.
Yeah, and she was like, she was one of the longest reigning women's champions they've had during the pandemic era where no one was there. So it's like cool that she got to defend it in Wembley, but in an 8-minute match where she's like the she's not even the third wheel. Britt Baker was the third wheel of anything.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. I feel bad for her, but it was cool that Saraya got to have that though in front of her, in front of her hometown, like with her family, in front of 80,000 people.
Right. So. I still think the only reason her mom allowed Tony to punch her in the face because she's still a wrestler.
Yeah, and her name is also Saraya. Her mom.
Yeah, yeah. Like Saraya Knight.
Yeah. Not a very original with the names in that family, I guess.
No. And if this was the WWE, she would have been, you know, it would, she would have been squashed.
Yeah.
Saraya.
You know, oh, yeah.
Oh, you're from here?
You're from here? This is your hometown? Okay.
Well, maybe not now. Maybe, like, when Vince was fully in charge and in the gorilla position every night, yes. Nowadays, probably not so much. Now that he has less influence over the product, or not as much influence, I don't know. But, yeah, there's definitely less Vince-isms going on nowadays, and I've noticed that the whole losing in your hometown thing has become a thing of the past. Thank God.
Mm-hmm.
But, moving along. Next up was the Coffin tag team match, Darby Allin and Sting.
Sting!
Yeah, Joker Sting, too, I should say.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're kind of doing that again.
Yeah, I think it was just for this night only, but still. Like, if you didn't know, there's a whole video on Impact Wrestling's YouTube page. It's like 2 hours long, and it's like the entire Joker Sting storyline.
And it's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so good.
Go watch it. Yeah. But anyway. Darby Allin and Sting versus Swerve Strickland and Christian Cage.
It was supposed to be AR Fox.
It was, but then apparently he had some family issues come up. Yeah. Or, yeah. It's not really super clear what it was about, but, yeah.
It was either two things going around. It was either he had visa issues and he didn't tell Tony till the last minute and now he's in the shitter, or his grandmother
passed? Yeah, his grandmother allegedly passed away, but nothing's been confirmed. Yeah. So
it was Christian Cage.
Yeah. Yeah, so Christian Cage replaced him, and yeah, this was a bit of a spot fest, as you could assume, out of any match involving Darby Allin.
The TNA chants were cool.
Yeah, oh yeah, that was also true.
Christian and Sting in the ring?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool.
Fair enough, yeah. But, like, my one gripe with this match is just, like, why did Luchasaurus accompany Christian to the ring, but then go to the back only to come back out again later on? Why not just stay there?
Right.
Like, it was no disqualification to begin with.
The dinosaur.
Yeah. But, like, like, yeah. So, yeah. At one point in this match, yeah, Luchasaurus comes back out, takes out a couple people, but then, yeah, Nick Wayne comes out, tries to take out Luchasaurus with a skateboard.
He gets chokeslammed. Doesn't
end well. So Luchasaurus chokeslams Nick Wayne onto the skateboard, which looked so brutal.
And the skateboard didn't break.
It didn't break. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
And also,
I just yelled, "You just killed a child."
Yeah.
Because he's a child.
Yeah. It's like that boy's
19.
Yeah.
No, he's 18.
He's 18. Yeah. And like, yeah. But. And then Luchasaurus just picks him up, puts him over his shoulder, and carries him to the back. It's like, I don't know what would be the most painful part about that. The fact that it didn't break, or, like, rubbing against the tape. Like, that's basically sandpaper.
Yeah.
I'm sure in the back after, he was like, son of a bitch.
I'm surprised it didn't scrape his back open. Like, it's,
Nothing worse than skateboard abuse.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Come on. I mean, Nick Wayne's taken way worse bumps than that, but that would have been top three for him, probably.
Yeah, also, a skateboard is a horrible weapon to try and chase off a dinosaur.
Yeah.
Could you imagine in Jurassic Park if they tried to chase off the Tyrannosaurus with a skateboard? It's like, get here!
That was basically Nick Wayne to Luchasaurus. Yeah. Because Nick Wayne is a child and Luchasaurus
like if Jeff Goldblum came up behind Rexy and was like, hey!
And in the background, if you can hear, my friend Michelle is dying right now.
I mean,
no, I get it.
Let's be real here. Yeah. I mean, he tried it with a flare, didn't work out so well. And then in the new one, he tried it with a flaming branch against the Giga, also didn't turn out so well. So it's like, why did they think a skateboard would scare off this Tyrannosaurus Rex? I don't know. Wrestling logic.
That was our first mistake.
Yeah.
Trying to figure
also,
that out.
A quick mention from that stadium stampede when Mox was stabbing people with a branding iron.
Oh, yeah, that was a show to Terry Funk. Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Oh, shit, I would have liked to.
It wasn't on fire, though.
No, he should have it on
no,
fire.
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that probably, there's probably like fire codes and stuff that would prevent that from happening.
Fire codes. Oh, those English, they're just wusses.
No, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, those bloody English.
Jeez.
Pyro's allowed, but can't start a controlled fire on a cattle prod.
To the coffin match.
Anyway, back to the coffin match. So
back to Luchasaurus killing his child.
Yeah, and also Darby Allin killing himself.
Oh god, that
yeah, when he landed on the coffin, although it was funny how in the coffin, like, they spray painted Swerve's house inside the coffin.
Yeah, I think my favorite part was when Sting went to slam Swerve on it, like in it, and Christian kicked it, and you could tell he didn't know it was closed, and when he landed on it, he's just like,
yeah. But here's the ending, like, Darby Allin and Sting ended up picking up the victory in this one.
And but, then when Sting, of course, jumped off something, we were like, Steve!
Yeah, it was
Steve!
Like, Sting, don't you do it! At least he didn't jump off the arch at the top of the stadium.
But, just the apron to the floor.
That'll be
technically,
next
he did
year.
Get down. We were like, get down!
Yeah.
He got down!
Yeah, technically, yes.
He's 64, he shouldn't be jumping off.
No.
Jesus Christ.
But... the funny thing is, though, is that Sting was able to avoid losing the match at some point by sticking his baseball bat and keeping the coffin from closing. But, like, when they closed it on Swerve, his dreadlocks were sticking out, so they technically didn't close it all the way.
Oh, yeah.
They technically didn't close it all the way, so but they still called for the bell. But it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That coffin is not closed.
Right?
So
do you think that could be, you know...
I doubt it was intentional, but I guess we'll have to wait until tomorrow to see if they bring it up.
I would use it too.
Yeah.
Like, well, no, see, so we want our rematch tonight on Dynamite.
Yeah, no, it'll be at All Out because that's in like 4 days. So or something. But
it's too close together.
Yeah. Oh, and also. Can't believe I forgot. Sting and Darby came out to Seek and Destroy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, holy WCW. Like, when I first heard that riff, I was just like, wait, what?
What? Right on.
Yeah. Little callback there. Yeah. Oh, I actually also forgot to mention during Saraya came out to We Will Rock You by Queen.
Yeah.
Like, Tony spent a pretty penny on the music rights.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
like,
there's someone that likes spending. Like, I think we spend a lot on music, dude.
Yeah,
no
nothing
shit.
Compared to what Khan pays for.
Think about it. Yeah, think
I
about
come
what...
record shopping with you, and it hurts my fucking soul.
That's right.
Oh, what'd you spend today? $100, and you're just like, ah, fuck you. I spent more. Like, fuck off, Snow.
Yeah, but Tony Khan just dropped $1 million worth of, you know, for this month.
Yeah, when we heard
know.
Search and Destroy, we were like, yes.
Search and Destroy.
Fuck off.
Come on.
Old Metallic.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of old Metallica now. Technically, Load and Reload are old Metallica.
Bite your tongue.
St. Anger's 20 years old.
There is only two kinds of Metallica. There's Metallica in the 80s, and then there's
and the
new Metallica. From
And the rest of it.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway, St. Anger's 20 years old.
I know. That's hard to believe.
I know. I remember waiting for that album to come out.
Oh, it's okay. End of Heartache, Killswitch Engage is 19 years old.
18.
As it
or did it? No, 19, that came out in 04. You're right. You're right.
As
you're
of
right.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Okay.
I saw that pop up and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, their live DVD came out in 2005.
Yeah, basically, my back.
Still can't drink in the U.S.
No. No. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine being an American and having to wait till you're 21 to go to the beer store. Like, that's just sick.
You don't wait. You just sneak in.
Or
yeah,
like,
or
I mean, what?
You know, I was 13 years old, and I have found my way of getting stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
From the one who was going to the zoo when you were 15.
I can still remember, like, being 19 years old and going down to the States with some buddies for a show. We went to go see Megadeth and a bunch of... It was the first Gigantour.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the one that came here, too, wasn't it?
No. No. The first one in 2005. But...
Oh, I was 12. Oh, my God.
Yeah. But, yeah, I went down there with a few buddies, and, like, I was 19, so, like, I was just getting used to being able to go into bars and, like, being able to go into beer vendors and stuff, and then I get down to America, and it's right back to, okay, you wait in the car.
You're a kid again, yeah.
You can't go in there!
Yeah.
Slap on the wrist.
And now I'm 37, and I can go anywhere I want. and I have been able to for 16 years. Jesus Christ.
Your back hurt yet?
Always. Yeah, I need a chiropractor very badly.
Yeah, me too.
But anyway, moving along on All In. Next match was Will Ospreay accompanied by Don Callis versus Chris Jericho accompanied by Sammy Guevara. That's the only way you can say it. Yeah, this I honestly was not expecting a lot out of this match, because as much as I love Chris Jericho, he's not Y2J anymore. He's not the Lionheart, but he did pull out a couple spots in this match that really did impress me. Overall, the match was really good.
That Stormbreaker counter?
Oh, the Ozcutter counter into the Codebreaker. Yeah. That was pretty fucking cool, but...
That spot where he landed on his head was scary, but...
Yeah, when he tried doing the Lion Salt, it's like...
And then Ospreay went to super kick him, and they both fucked it up?
Yeah,
but... Jericho just fucking lands on his head, and we're like, no!
Yeah,
like... Chris, you're 50, stop!
Yeah, Jericho needs to stop doing Lion Salts, because he's fucking them up more than he's landing them nowadays. Yeah.
Like... He's landing on his head every, like, third one.
Yeah.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. You can't be doing that.
Nope.
But, yeah. But
yeah, every time he runs to the ropes, we're like, is this it?
Yeah.
Don't Hayabusa yourself. Because that spot still fucking...
Yeah, I know. It's...
Yeah.
I worry about the guy. I really do.
Yeah. That's all he needs to do is land on his face and kick himself in the back of the head and break his own neck.
I never
walk again.
Well, I feel like we're seeing the twilight of Jericho's career in ring, to be honest with you. As sad as it is to admit, but...
I think he's only got a couple left in him.
Yeah.
Years.
Yeah. But nevertheless, he did take some pretty good, like, on-purpose bumps in this match. Ospreay carried most of it, even though it's like... It is kind of like cool to see, though, because like Ospreay wrestles a style that was like initially popularized by guys like Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
So to see like one of the OGs of this style of wrestling fighting one of the guys who like one of the modern day, I'm not going to call him a new guy because Ospreay is far from a new guy, but he's a veteran himself, but he can still go.
Yeah.
Like Ospreay now is like Jericho in like 2001 WWF. Like, we'll say that.
And then watching Ospreay move around, and I'm the same age as him, and it's like, fuck, I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
Will I ever be able to? No.
Oh, yeah, because he's 30.
Yeah, he's 30, yeah.
Okay. But, yeah, like, in the end...
And one of the best wrestlers in the fucking world at age 30.
I mean, like, before he was doing stuff that was so dangerous that he was, like, landing on his head all the time. So, but thankfully he's, like...
Oh, New Japan and their neck drops.
Yeah, thankfully he's reworked his style to be a little more, well, safe, for lack of a better term.
He just needs a shoulder reconstruction, that's it.
Yeah. But, you know, this ended up being a really good match, I will say. I wasn't expecting much, but, like I said, they worked well together. Jericho did pull out some pretty good spots. There were some really awesome reversals. But, eventually... Inevitably, Ospreay hit Jericho with the Stormbreaker, got the 1-2-3, left, as they were leaving, Jericho was just standing in the ring, Sammy's trying to console him, and he just pushes Sammy Guevara away, so.
Oh, yeah, and Jericho came out singing his theme.
Oh, yeah,
And was winded 30 seconds in,
Yeah, of course he did the Freddie Mercury, hey-oh. I knew he was going to do that even before he did it.
Oh, yeah, and the Bucks earlier in the night came out dressed as Freddie Mercury.
Oh yeah, they did.
Yeah, actually, I saw pictures of that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, a lot of tributes to Freddie Mercury and Queen. Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, now Fozzy can officially say that they've played in Wembley to 80,000 people, even if it was just one song. But but still. Yeah, Jericho was standing up on the stage with them performing at first, but then he like went down to the tunnel and like was, as he was walking to the ring, still singing the song, but you could tell he was getting a little bit winded. So
every word is like his voice would crack more and more, and it's like, Chris, stop.
But I mean, hearing 80,000 people sing Judas was pretty cool too.
Yeah,
like so, yeah, like, but do you think Fozzy's going to use that now in advertisements? Like,
of course they are.
Played to 80,000 people
in
Wembley
Stadium. Jericho, of course they are.
Even though they weren't there for them. No, no.
They were there to watch his ass get whooped by Ospreay.
Yeah, of course. Okay.
Who is everyone cheering for the most part?
Ospreay
or?
I think it was mostly Ospreay.
It was mostly Ospreay because he's the hometown boy. Or not hometown. He's from elsewhere in England, but he's still from England. But... like, but there you could tell that there's like a certain there's a level of respect for Jericho. So they were, I think, for this match, the crowd was basically just enjoying the match more so than booing the heel, which was Ospreay.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because now isn't like Jericho the face?
Yeah, but then, but also like you like Jericho or Ospreay is still the IWGP US champion, and he recently renamed it the IWG UK championship. Yep. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So
that works. US flag in the middle. It's a UK. Flag
So I can't imagine he would get booed for that in England.
It is cool though. Seeing Chris put all the younger guys over now.
Yeah. Like at least he's not doing what WWE would have initially done and just have the old guys run through the new guys, which I'm also glad that doesn't happen anymore. But, but yeah, like I said,
make superstars. You have to create talent. That's one of the problems. And I'm not going to get too high up on the snowy soapbox here, but you need to create talent. And if you just keep putting your old guard over and over, it's just not going to happen. And then once the future is now, well, what the fuck do we do? Well, I don't know. Maybe we should have listened to Snowy 20 years ago.
Yeah. But, okay. Exactly.
It's not that hard.
it's not that hard, people.
Now,
yes.
With that said, next up was the No Holds Barred six-man tag team match for the AEW World Trios Championships, the House of Black defending against the acclaimed and not daddy ass, but badass Billy Gunn. Yep. I don't know the difference.
Can they call him that though? Does Vince own badass?
They were just calling. Yeah.
Or was he Mr. Ass?
No, he was been all of them, but like they didn't call him badass Billy Gunn outright in the promo beforehand. He said, "There's a badass coming to London, and his name is Billy Gunn." So I think there's enough space.
There's enough
between
there,
yeah.
Okay. Couldn't call him Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
But if you called him Cody and Brandy Rhodes.
Yeah, Cody with Brandy,
with Brandy Rhodes. Yes, there it is.
Yeah.
Right. Should use his real last name to fuck people. Ronalds.
Yeah. I would have been good with that, actually.
Or Billy Gunn comes out to his real name. And his name is Monty Sop.
Yeah.
How threatening.
Badass Monty Sop.
Well, actually, that sounds like an Ultimate Fighter or UFC guy or mixed martial arts. Monty Sop, I could see that name in MMA.
I don't know. When I hear the name Monty Sop, I think of wet socks for some reason.
Wet mop.
Yeah.
But anyway,
that's the kid in a mosh pit who always gets beat the fuck up. Monty Sop.
Monty Sop. Montgomery Sop.
Smithers?
That might have to be the name of the episode.
Montgomery Sop.
Yes. Okay.
Well, there it is. We have one every episode at that moment.
Montgomery Sop.
All right. That's going to take some research to get that one.
Yeah.
Been a long day.
Everyone's going to be like, what the fuck is that? Billy Gunn.
Anyway, let's just get through this. Yeah, we still have NWA to go through.
Oh, fuck.
So anyway, six-man tag team match for the World Trios titles. House of Black versus The Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. Yeah, there's some. It was a pretty good match. I was sports entertained. There was a part where the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn did the scissor me timbers onto Julia Hart.
Right in the yam
bag. Yeah,
that makes
Taz
sense.
Said. Yeah.
You know, if you're going to do the scissor
but thing. But, you know, Anthony Bowens is gay, so it's him doing it to a woman. Right. It doesn't, yeah, you know.
Okay.
You know. Fine. Yeah, it's fine. It's
okay,
fine.
Okay, so he's not being a pig.
I guess not.
All right.
I suppose not. I don't know. But, yeah. But, yeah, Acclaimed and Billy Gunn ended up getting the win.
Okay, and so they're the new...
They are the new trios champions. Okay. Yeah. So Billy Gunn supposedly retired, but is now back, and he's now a champion. I'm guessing this is his last championship run before he retires. And, you know, like, for a guy who's, like, pushing 60, he's older than The Undertaker, at least he can still go, and at least he still seems to have a good quality of
and
life.
He's in the best shape.
Yeah, he's doing good.
Oh, also, I wanted to mention, when House of Black came out for their entrance, they were all wearing white, and... Buddy Matthews had a lantern on him that he put down in the middle of the ramp, and they all could just kind of like bowed their heads to it before walking.
It was pretty good tribute to Bray Wyatt. When the lights went out too, they zoomed out and you saw everyone with their phones.
Oh, the fireflies. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I like that too. Yeah. It's a couple little nods to Bray Wyatt, even though he had nothing to do with AEW, it's still nice seeing another company respect, another fallen.
Oh, brother. For sure. Yeah. For sure. At NWA 75, they did the 10 bells.
Nice.
You know, and the graphic at the beginning, and neither of those, well, Funk years ago was former NWA world champion, but, you know, Wyndham Rotundo himself, okay, yeah, his dad and his uncle were major NWA stars in the 80s, but.
He himself
wasn't. No. So, yeah, it's good. I'd like to see shit like that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, like, a lot of guys. And also, Tony Khan has given any wrestlers who want to go to Wyndham Rotunda's memorial this Wednesday, he's given them permission to take off Dynamite if they wanted to go to it. So
okay. Well, that should be a given.
Yeah.
Well, they did the same for Jay Briscoe.
Yep. Yeah, but then in Vince's WWE, that would not be allowed.
No.
Oh, no.
That wouldn't be allowed, or maybe without... severe repercussions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'd be like your friend died. Ha!
Yeah.
Come to work.
Yeah. Life sucks and then you die.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And it also makes your federation look good because you could be like, well, Jake the guy was supposed to wrestle.
He was supposed
to wrestle here tonight. Unfortunately, he's taken the night off to attend Bray Wyatt's funeral or Wyndham Rotunda's funeral, and it makes that federation look good.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like I would make a lot of emphasis on that. We don't have half our roster here. Sorry, it's going to be a different type of show.
Yeah,
we're paying tribute here.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. For sure, but
Vince.
Let's cap this off.
Next.
It's time for our main event.
Dun, 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 dun.
MJF defending the AEW World Heavyweight Championship against Adam Cole, baby. Now, the storyline for this on Dynamite has been ridiculously entertaining, for lack of any better term.
Mm-hmm.
Some people hate it. Some people love it.
It's the fucking Chris Jericho, Kevin Owens story, but it's MJF and Adam Cole.
Yeah, and like, I don't know.
And it's great.
Like, let's be real here. It's just, yeah, I, like, Mason was expressing his displeasure for it about how they take up too much time on Dynamite. But you know what? I think it's entertaining watching
they're building the main event.
Yeah. But, yeah, let me tell you, that whole storyline, like, the whole them being best friends thing and then the whole who's going to turn on who thing, that was just all over the place in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at first, they both put on their Better Than You Bebe tag team shirts.
Yeah, I saw that. That's cool.
Yeah, but then it started getting into the whole, like, who's going to turn on who thing. Like, MJF did the thumb jabs to Adam Cole. At one point, Adam Cole just straight up ripped the shirt off of MJF. And, like, everyone was just like, oh, is it going to be him? Is it going to be, like, who's it going to be? And, yeah, like, one...
That suplex on the steps.
Oh, the suplex on the steps where, like, yeah, MJF almost got counted out. Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
That looked painful. But,
mm-hmm.
Then
MJF is probably still sore.
Yeah, and there was one spot where MJF cleared off the announce table and was going to tombstone Adam Cole through it, but just couldn't bring himself to do it. But Adam Cole was just like, well, I can do it. And then tombstones MJF onto the announce table. And there was that where the referee was knocked out for a while. The referee got knocked out, and then they tried to do in the Eddie Guerrero spot where they basically like brought the chair in and they were just throwing the chair at each other back and forth. And then Adam Cole,
like hot potato with
a
chair.
Adam Cole just like eventually lays down, and MJF, while the referee's still like just about to get up, MJF looks at the referee, shrugs, pilmanizes himself with the chair by putting it over his head,
and just lays down.
And then Adam Cole just like looks up and just like, what the fuck, man? And then of course the referee comes to and is just looking around, just like, hey, what's going on here? And then the first finish of the match, I should say, came when they both tried to hit the double clothesline on each other and ended up pinning each other at the same time for the win. But can't end that way.
Adam Cole didn't do this on Collision. Five more minutes. And
it was a Dynamite. Their first match together, they went to a time limit draw, and he just had five more minutes, and MJF
went,
refused.
No.
Yeah.
Not going to do this here in this stadium. We're going to go like, to a winner. This is fucking Wembley.
Yeah, it's not only going to take 5 minutes. He's like, we're going to go until we have a fucking winner. So I like how they called back to their first match and the whole beginning of this entire thing.
Yeah,
right.
With that. So, yeah, they start up again, and the referee gets taken out one more time.
But this time it was
Adam Cole trying to do the Canadian Destroyer to MJF, but when he jumped off the top rope, he ended up catching the referee and giving the referee the Canadian Destroyer. So, yeah.
Wrestling!
Yeah. So Bryce Remsburg has been taking a beating for this whole match.
Bryce Remsburg is dead.
There's your MVP right
But when
there.
That happened, yeah, when that ended up happening, MJF decided maybe he'll try to get the upper hand, and takes out the Dynamite Diamond Ring, puts it on his finger, goes to knock out Adam Cole with it, but then decides, no, maybe I won't, and takes the ring off, puts it back in his trunks, and then Roderick Strong comes out, spins him around, takes him to Dick Kick City, and then
there's a song title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
there's a punk band, Dick Kick City.
And then keeps telling, and then gives, yeah, while the referee is still down, gives Adam Cole the World Heavyweight title belt and just says, do it, I'm your best friend. Just then, yeah, just trying to influence Adam Cole to take out MJF with the title belt and get the win. But Adam Cole refuses, throws the belt down, and then just tells Roddy to get out of here.
Uh-oh, okay.
So Roddy goes to the back, and while this is all happening, the referee comes to, but so does MJF, and then gets him in a small package and wins the match.
Oh, okay.
Retains the title. Adam Cole, now afterwards, Adam Cole is absolutely distraught, doesn't know what to do with himself. MJF is trying to console him, being like, it's okay, buddy. They still love you. They still love you, even if you didn't win. I got lucky. And then he goes like, no, hold on. And then like goes and gets their ROH tag team title belts that they won earlier in the night, gives Adam Cole his belt. Adam Cole just throws it away immediately. And they're just like, and MJF just looks so distraught and just goes, I knew it. You were never my friend. You just wanted this. You just wanted this. Like the World Heavyweight title belt. He's like, you just wanted this. Uh-huh. You wanted so bad. Take it.
Fucking yeah. Take it.
Yeah. And then, then MJF turns his back to Adam Cole, puts his hands on his head and just says, just do it. Just get it over with, man. And then Roddy Strong comes back out and just telling Adam Cole to do it. But then he doesn't. He throws down the belt. Him and MJF hug in the middle of the ring, celebrate with their tag team title belts and the World Heavyweight title belt. And yeah, happy ending. Except for Roddy Strong. But right. Roddy Strong still look. Matt Taven and Mike Bennett come out and they're trying to hold back Roddy Strong. And yeah, so like the event fades to black with MJF and Adam Cole in the ring together. With the confetti.
Yeah, they announce that All In is in Wembley again next year.
Yeah, 2024, yeah. See if it does as good for sales. So that with that being said, that concludes AEW's first ever stadium show in Wembley.
Right on, right on. Before we get to the rating for it, I do want to say, okay, the final paying audience was 80,000.
81,000, but they made sure to point out that it was paid attendance, not what WWE does, where they factor in the paid attendance, WWE staff, the venue staff, journalists, anyone who gets freebies,
comps.
They factor in all of that. That's why WrestleMania 32 had 101,000 people somehow.
Okay. When it originally was like 80.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so technically, this show had more paid attendance than WrestleMania 32.
Right.
So.
Right. Now, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, this is not only good for AEW, it's good for pro wrestling in general.
But it's not in America, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, like
America.
But okay. Like, and like,
for a company that's not even 5 years old,
it's amazing.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking though, like, with the way the pro wrestling audience in America is, it seems like it's so polarized. It's WWE on one side, AEW here.
Oh, the tribalism it sucks.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
and I'm just wondering, like, is the WWF kind of like, are their fans going, well, okay, that's good, but they won't do it again.
Yeah, or they could never do it in America.
And
of course, I also got to point out in all of this, tickets for WrestleMania 40 went on sale, and they announced that first day we did a record 90,000 ticket sales. Here's the thing. The link can only hold 60,000 people. That 90,000 people was 45,000 people buying tickets for both days.
Right.
So it's it's not like they sold 90,000 separate tickets for one thing at once. It was definitely they just took like people who bought package deals and just decided to blow it up.
Right.
It's like they've been doing since they've been doing these two-night WrestleManias. They do combined attendance. It's like, the total combined attendance for WrestleMania weekend was 160,000. I'm just like, that's not how that works.
That's right. That's right. Because most of them were coming back repeats. The next day.
Yeah.
It was 80.
Yeah. It was.
And then the fucking dumb AEW fans are like, we sold out Wembley before WWE did.
Wembley.
It's a different Wembley. Fuck off.
Well, it's a bigger Wembley than the original one for SummerSlam.
Yeah, but still, it's a different Wembley.
But now I guarantee you, like, WWE is going to book a show at Wembley in London.
100,000 people.
It's not even going to be like a WrestleMania. It's just going to be one of those, like, it's like another Clash at the Castle or Super Showdown or whatever.
Or they're having a Super Showdown again in a couple weeks too.
I noticed they never announced, those are always stadium shows. They never announced the attendance for Super Showdown or Crown Jewel or any of the Saudi Arabia shows.
Nope.
Probably because maybe most of those are comped, but never stopped them before.
So,
the princes are so rich. Just come to the show. I'll pay for it.
Of course.
Where did I put my pants with $100 million in it? Oh, well.
I wish I would have been able to make it. It sounds like I really would have enjoyed it. So, but I'm going to let you guys, horns up, horns down, horns in the middle.
Horns
what
up.
Do you say?
Yeah, I would give it a horns up. It wasn't like, there were some title changes. There was some storyline progression. Not some of the matches I would have preferred to see on a stage like that, but nevertheless, it was a good, solid AEW pay-per-view. I'll give it a horns up.
Right on. I wasn't totally without wrestling pay-per-views this past weekend.
Yeah.
I kind of had my own thing going on. And like I said, at the top of the hop, NWA is 75.
Mm-hmm.
It's now traditionally two nights.
On of course it is.
Both on pay-per-view.
As of course it's tradition.
It's supposed to be their huge, you know.
It's their WrestleMania.
Their mania, yeah.
Well, it's like New Japan's been doing that forever. Wrestle Kingdom's been two nights. A long time. Yeah.
Billy Corgan probably thought it was his idea. Billy Pumpkins.
Yeah, Billy Pumpkins.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch it live. I was out and about with a buddy.
You were out and about.
I was out and about. So I wasn't able to watch live Saturday, and I was watching Saturdays the next night while Sundays was live. Okay. And then soon as I was done Saturdays, I had
Sundays.
To wait to make sure I didn't accidentally catch the remainder of the main event. I had to wait for that to go off the air and then watch Sundays. Basically, in one night, I sat through like 5.5 hours of NWA, which
that's
I'm not arguing that.
It's a lot of wrestling to sit through. But then again, most AEW pay-per-views are 5 hours. WrestleMania, the last time it was one night, was 8 hours.
Yeah.
That was a lot. That was a lot to sit through.
For sure.
Or when Mania used to start their pre-shows at 11 a.m.
Did they?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't remember that.
Well, that would be like the NXT and then the pre-show shit.
Well, NXT was the night before when they used to do that. They used to do takeovers of the week, the same weekend as Big Five pay-per-views.
But still, when Mania
they don't do that anymore.
Still, when Mania starts at 2 in the afternoon,
yeah, it's a bit much.
11 p.m. It's like, I'm over it.
Yeah, Becky Lynch technically won those titles. Oh, she technically won the main event on a Monday.
Yeah, I guess so. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She headlined Monday Night Raw and WrestleMania in the same day.
It ended at 11 o'clock here, but in New York, it was midnight. So
There we are. Yeah.
And so a botched finish, too, because Ronda wasn't supposed to get pinned.
We don't talk about that.
Quiet, you.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, my bad.
Yeah, come on, man.
So,
like, revisionist history says that she clearly pinned her.
I'm not going to go
through. Well, Ronda's gone now, so who cares?
Not going to go through 5.5 hours here. There is just some things, you know, some highlights that I wanted to point out, the stuff that really made me go, fuck yeah. Okay, for starters, it's once again, it was back at the Chase in St. Louis.
Okay.
You know, the legendary Chase. So many great NWA. And I guess even the Central States territory when that was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had so many great moments. The ring they were using, okay, was once owned by none other than Harley Race.
Really?
Yeah. Imagine being that young guy.
Like, was it like his practice ring that he kept in his garage or something? Or?
The ring we're using tonight was once owned by the legendary Harley Race.
And if you don't wipe your boots on the apron, you're an asshole.
That would be pretty cool.
Just imagine you're a young guy, you know, you're only a couple of years into the league, but you know, Harley Race fan or whatever, and you have this opportunity, like, to perform in the man's ring, like, wow.
Nervous as
shit. Yeah. I'd be nervous just sitting at ringside.
Yeah.
You know,
this
I'm
thing
just,
is 80 years
I,
old.
I would be like,
yeah,
right beside Harley Race's ring.
So you want to touch the apron, but you don't.
You want to touch it.
Billy, look over there.
Thank you.
Some say his gun is still under the ring. I had to. I'm sorry.
I almost lost my beer.
No, that's good. Yeah.
Some say his gun is still under the ring.
So, like I said,
in one of the turnbuckles.
There was 850 matches on this, and I'm not going to go through everything.
If someone breaks a board,
I'm just
the gun comes out.
Yeah.
The only real low light, okay, was Violent J. Like,
that dumbass. Yeah.
They were threatening to have one of the to bring him out, and he managed two clowns. The Brotherhood of Funstruction or some bullshit. They had some clowns.
Okay. Sounds like an ICP
and,
thing.
Like the first night.
You know that dumbass is here in a few weeks?
Violent J?
Yeah.
For what? God.
The Exchange Event Center.
Is he the fat one?
Yeah.
Okay.
For what? What's the...
It's called Violent J and the Monsters or whatever. The three-headed monster, and it's at the Exchange Event Center.
But Shaggy Two-Dope...
That's not our show, is it?
No, of course not.
Okay. There. Okay.
Good, because
I'm not
moving his shit. I was fast-forwarding his
crap. Carry your own pop bottles.
Yeah.
Walk away.
I don't want to touch your shit. Like, fuck off. So that was really the only real...
The real low lights of the entire thing. Yeah, fair enough.
Couple of the major highlights I want to give is just like... You talk about a weekend MVP. I got to give it to Kenzie Page. Mm-hmm. She went in... as the NWA world and the women's television champion.
Okay.
Okay. And it was the first match, first night, and they were kind of giving her a push. They put this title on her, and she's moving more into some solo stuff, you know, away from Fully Empowered. Okay. And she ended up losing to Maxine Paler. Okay. Which is really no disgrace, okay? But it's like, this is kind of weird.
Maxine Paler's a fucking tank.
She's a beast, yeah. Like, holy jeez.
Yeah.
So it's
wouldn't
like, okay.
Want to run into her in a back end.
Well, maybe they're going somewhere with it, okay?
Long-term storytelling.
Kind of,
long-term storytelling.
Yeah, sort of. Okay. Well, long-term storytelling in one weekend.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
Okay, yeah.
Because the first night, they were having a women's gauntlet match.
Oh, okay.
Okay, everyone comes in at all six of them. They all come in 1-minute intervals, and you're eliminated either going over the top rope or pinned. Mm. The last person in the ring gets a shot the next night against Camille. Okay.
How long has Camille been?
She has been
NWA Women's Champion
800 days.
And
like
does she defend it regularly?
Or
is this like a Brock Lesnar?
At least once every 30 days, at least.
Okay, well,
because she was defending
it
on 14, TV.
15 defenses or something.
She was she defended it on TV. Like,
okay. So this isn't a Roman Reigns situation.
Oh, no.
Okay,
no.
Okay.
She was defending it regularly, but because it was the NWA and it's a woman's title, you know, she wasn't getting a lot of the attention outside of the NWA that she should have
been getting.
Because, yeah, like, she was champion for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Go back to the Smashing Pumpkins.
And she was... And she was defending it against top talent on the pay-per-views and on Power, and you know, yeah, she's a fantastic champion. So the winner of this gauntlet received a match against Camille because she had lost the title. I can't remember exactly what they said, but Billy Pumpkin said, "We're going to allow Kenzie Page into the gauntlet match, but she has to be number one."
Hmm.
Okay, and she was the first one out. And she went all the way through from right from the beginning, did the shtick, the whole, I guess this is almost a thing now in pro wrestling, and she won it.
Hmm.
Okay. The next night, she has her match against Camille. And there's a reason they call her the Brick House, because she's big, but she's not huge. Like, she's not Nia Jax type big. She's not, you know, she's in shape.
Right.
Okay. And you can see that she is a natural, solid athlete. And she's getting better and better. Okay. Kenzie Page is just a little thing, you know, but she's got a lot of spirit.
Of course.
And she wins the gauntlet, challenges Camille, and actually wins.
Really?
Now, what's the amazing thing about this is she was total heel going into night one. She is one of the most over people in the NWA right now, just organically.
Really?
People just, holy shit, look at her go. You know, and it's not just her winning, it's the work rate, which counts for something in the NWA.
Yeah.
And she just kind of pulled out all the spots and won over the audience. And hopefully the same thing with the television audience as well. So that's, although, like I said, I haven't seen I haven't seen All In, okay, but just watching Paige this weekend was just absolutely phenomenal. Got to give it to Camille, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, she's not the... Like, if they weren't giving the build to Paige, you know, then this probably wouldn't be the person to beat Camille. But put her over clean, okay? Did the job. But that's what kind of makes me think that Camille's on her way out, unfortunately, yeah. Because... And that's going to hurt the NWA because she's a huge talent there, you know. And you know someday if she does move on, AEW or the WWF or whatever, she's going to be huge there. Now, afterwards, there was no, you got lucky. I'm going to see you in the rematch. I'm going to beat you in record time. Even on Facebook, she was like, way to go, Kenzie. You deserve it. You're going to be a great champion. What's next for me with a question mark? She went out on her back.
Yeah.
She looks like Camille's on her way to AEW or
NXT or something. Yeah,
or something. And good on her. Good on her. I'm going to miss her in the NWA, but I'll be looking forward to what they do with her.
Yeah, maybe elsewhere. She'll show up in Impact. Who knows?
I would prefer that. Yeah. I would actually prefer that. The main event.
I heard about this one. It's kind of a lose-lose situation, really.
The main event was Tyrus in a bull rope match.
Defending against
who's now known as EC3 full-time.
Ethan Carter the Third.
Ethan Carter the Third.
Yeah.
Which he's dropped the 1% rich boy gig and all that, which you have to. If you're going to be a face, you can't be Mr. Daddy Warbucks.
No.
It just doesn't work. Okay, now everyone knows what Tyrus is like, okay? He's ultra-conservative, and I don't mean to get political here, but this is kind of important. He's ultra-conservative. He goes on Fox News, surprise, surprise, or the Fox program or whatever, and he spews his venom, sometimes downright bigotry, okay, to the point where he actually said recently, just couple days even before the pay-per-view, that he would beat his son if he ever used pronouns to him. Like, holy shit, really? Okay, that's, I understand being a conservative and all that and having your beliefs and all that, like, to say something like that. All right, now there was a stipulation already. Was not only was it for the NWA world title, if Tyrus lost, he would retire.
Yeah.
That old shtick. Okay. As Tyrus was coming to the ring, knowing everything that I just said, he's got his kids with him.
Oh. His same kids that he would beat if they ever used.
And them. I'm thinking to myself, well, this is damage control.
Yeah.
You know, you said something, like, you normally say stupid shit, but, and I believe I said this last episode, the whole reason, like, Tyrus is even a thing, because Billy Pumpkin seems to think that his exposure on Fox is worth something. Hmm. Well, it's not, because no one watching Fox really gives a rat's ass about the NWA. They probably all think he's holding a WWE title.
Probably.
Every time he's on TV. Okay. So. So I maybe this was the time. You know, I don't know if because they had something planned. Tyrus is taking time off to go do some bullshit on Fox. Or whatever. I'm just glad that he's on his way out now and he's gone. EC3 ended up pinning him, winning the title. Tyrus is gone. And then, but everyone starts coming down to the ring and it's all this feel good moment for him because he's got to retire now. And I'm like, oh God, Really?
I saw footage of him running the ropes. It's sad.
It is. Yeah, I don't. Okay, politics aside,
Snoop Dogg ran the ropes better than fucking Tyrus.
This guy was never main event talent, you know, in any federation. All that. So I'm. If it's only temporary because these retirements are really only temporary, I'm going to be enjoying the NWA a hell of a lot more without him. And I'm looking forward to seeing EC3 and see what they're doing with him as world champion. As a matter of fact, today is a Tuesday as we speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The new power is tonight, so I'm going to be checking that out when I finally get home.
Okay.
Tonight. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Got to subject Mrs. Snowy to more wrestling, don't you?
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Well,
you just talked about it for 2 hours.
You want to watch some more? What the hell? Yeah. So for,
damn it.
So for myself, horns up, horns down, horns in the middle. There is definitely some horns down stuff. There is some horns in the middle. But for the most part, it was money well spent. Horns up. I enjoyed
it. Fair
enough. I enjoyed it. And they made a fan of Kenzie Page out of me, that's for sure.
So, Now onto the suspension.
Well, I figure I should mention after the results of All In and our predictions.
I also just read something else about it.
Well,
okay, but
Snowy,
what were you going to say?
Snowy and I are tied. So,
yeah.
I think the WNIC championship is held in abeyance.
Held up?
Yeah.
So, what do we want to do? And for we'll anyone
do
kind of yeah,
and Payback and All Out.
And All Out, whoever has the most wins on the other end of this.
Both? Are they both next weekend?
Yeah, both one. Yeah, Saturday, Payback Sunday. Is Saturday and yeah, All Out is Sunday.
I know I won't be here Saturday. Got something to do. I think I'm going to our friend Will, who doesn't really come to local shows anymore, it's his birthday.
Okay.
So I might go stop in. And then Sunday I'll probably be All Out.
Okay,
cool. And for anyone tuning in for the first time, what exactly we're talking about is when we get together for whatever pay-per-views we decide, we do our predictions, whoever wins either retains the WNIC title or is the new champion.
Bringing my belt back, damn it.
Your reign of terror has come to an end.
It's come to an end.
It'll start again soon.
Yeah. In vacancy, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Vacant has claimed the WNIC title.
Wait, damn it. That was actually, like, that was Camille's thing, too, when she was world champion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the 16-time world champion, you know, the 7-time world champion. Her thing was one time. I'm the one-time world champion. I will only be the one-time world champion. And
yeah,
look, it's looking like it.
I don't know. I think one long title reign is a lot more impressive than
16 short
ones. That means you lost it 15
times.
That
means you lost it 16 times if you're not the current champion.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess it's you and me this weekend.
I guess, yeah.
All right. Well, just make sure the belt is shined up for when it's coming home.
It's here, yeah.
It's upstairs.
Okay, well, that's good. So I know where it is when I take it home next week.
Okay, fine.
All right. I'm trying to trash talk here, and I'm just not good at it. Like, I got to learn how to be an ass. How is it some people can be assholes?
You got to take the asshole lesson that Alexa Bliss had to take.
Yeah, uh-huh. I'm starting
evidently,
to think that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So
to the suspensions we go.
Yes. Before we kind of get into tonight's turnbuckle talk, we do have some interesting stuff that we should get to, including the stuff we kind of hinted
touched
at
on, yeah.
during
yeah.
the R All Out recap with Mr. CM Punk.
All In. Yeah.
With Mr. CM Punk. What's going on there?
Mr. Philbrook.
Well, going back to what I said about the whole glass incident involving Jack Perry and Jack Perry calling him out on live television. Mm-hmm. Just apparently when Jack Perry was walking through the curtain, CM Punk was there. At the, I guess AEW calls it the go position, not the gorilla position. But
okay.
Yeah, he was standing there because CM Punk was coming out for the first match of the main card. So, yeah, they got in a bit of an altercation and some words were said. There's stories from both sides coming out now that apparently about who threw the first punch, but apparently they had some words and allegedly CM Punk pie-faced Jack Perry, and then they got into a bit of a scrap, but eventually got him into a chokehold, and yeah, they were separated, and Jack Perry was sent home.
I just read also, I was on my phone last, that Samoa Joe broke up that fight.
Well,
that's why that match went on first. Joe was like, let's get it over with.
Well, weren't they already in the go position ready to do their match?
I guess.
Like,
but
well, I'm sure they must have been ready to go. Yeah. So,
but like when Joe breaks up a fight, that'd be terrifying.
Yeah, I would. That is a man I would hate to fight.
Yeah, yeah. I think when he says, "Hey,"
yeah,
okay,
especially with his voice, I can picture him saying that.
Yeah.
Hey,
yes, Mr. Samoa Joe. Yes,
yes, yes,
yes, Joey Samoa, run.
We were just kidding. Yeah, Jack's my buddy. Yeah,
his dad was great. Yeah,
but yeah, it looks like this has led to a suspension for both Jack Perry and CM Punk. Oh, it's that time of year. CM Punk just gets, they're calling it Brawl In. And, yeah. But here's the thing, though. All Out is next weekend. All Out is in Chicago.
So guess who's suspended for being at the show?
He has to be there, then.
He's suspended.
Well, if he's suspended, I can only imagine that that crowd is just going to hijack the show.
Oh, yeah.
And for the collision before, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, see the show that was created because CM Punk wanted to stay away from the Elite.
Right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's like, are Tony Khan's hands tied, or does he let Punk work this show? Because the rumor was that at All Out, it was going to be MJF versus CM Punk to crown an undisputed world's champion.
The real world. Yeah.
Well, they can't do that because a week build for a match like that?
Yeah.
Like, this is a six-month angle.
I know, but...
You know.
Wrestling.
Do it at Double or Nothing next year.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like...
They build it for a year, doing it all in Wembley next year.
So they're probably going to do another Adam Cole versus MJF. But I don't know. We'll see. They haven't announced... They haven't announced barely any matches.
There's
like
four?
There's Will Hobbs versus Miro. There's... John Moxley versus either Orange Cassidy or Penta for the International Championship. I hope it's Cassidy. It will be Cassidy. Mm-hmm. That's where the storyline's been. Mm-hmm. But
Penta versus Mox would be violent as shit.
It would be, but but it's been building to Cassidy versus Mox. So,
yeah. And since Cassidy's been getting violent lately too, it'll still be good.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just be Mox will bleed in 30 seconds.
Yeah. But anyway,
that's its own trope now.
But yeah, they're
bleeding.
There aren't any. Oh, I know. I guess there's the TNT title match. There's Darby Allin versus Luchasaurus. But there isn't any. Oh, God, and there's the TV. Then there's the TBS title. There's Chris Statlander versus Ruby Soho.
Yeah.
But I guess there hasn't been a women's world title, a men's world title, a tag team title, or a trios title match announced for All In, which is supposed to be AEW's WrestleMania, like last time I checked,
yeah.
Like, or their SummerSlam, maybe it's one of their big events. So, so I don't know. We'll see. They'll probably just run back the MJF Adam Cole angle again, but it'll
be AEW Backlash, and it'll be all the matches that happened at All In the other day.
Just rematches, WrestleMania rematches, or all-in rematches.
And it's actually not a bad idea if you do something with it.
Like
if you know, at Dynamite, you know, Roderick Strong came in and interfered. Well, we don't want him coming into the ring anymore. So not because I want to tear you apart, but maybe so there is a clear winner, we should make it a cage match or something. Like, do something with it.
I
just read something else on the whole CM Punk.
What is it?
According to three sources, Punk allegedly told Khan he would quit and walked out.
Wow.
I'm okay with that. He can go.
I mean, yeah. Like, It definitely seems like every time there's a backstage altercation in AEW, CM Punk has been involved in some way.
Some way, shape, or form.
Last week,
before he
chewed out Ryan Nemeth for no reason.
Yeah, that's because, well, Ryan Nemeth said some shit about him last year. But and then there's like CM Punk saying that certain people weren't allowed at Collision. There's like Matt Hardy wasn't allowed there. Ryan Nemeth wasn't allowed there. Hangman Adam Page wasn't allowed there. And
all people that could beat his ass.
And even Christopher Daniels, you know, the guy who's head of talent relations. No, you know, he's not allowed. He's not allowed at Collision. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
Daniels is in his 50s and he could whoop CM Punk still.
Oh, yeah. But it's getting a bit ridiculous. Like, none of this stuff happened before. Like, this stuff only started happening after CM Punk came into the company.
Mm-hmm.
And what was he gone for, like 9 months after? Yeah. None of this happened.
He came back after 6 months, and then he tore his bicep and was gone for a while. That was nice.
Yeah, but none of this backstage arguing was happening or drama or anything was happening when he was gone. And as soon as he's back, oh, here we go again. Like,
hopefully that source of him saying you quit is true. He could fuck off.
Yeah. See, I don't know if I like that though. I don't know if I want that because I still think there's value in Punk. I still enjoy watching him. I'm not ready for him to
potentially turn the whole thing with the Elite from last year into a storyline, but that's only if all parties are willing to put aside their differences.
Everyone has to play nice. I was listening to Dutch Mantel's podcast today.
And we're talking about a bunch of 30 and 40 year old men here.
Yeah, that's right. Like, and he said,
if we got like, if Punk's final match is Punk and Fear the Revolver against the Elite,
or even just Punk versus Omega.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. That's
Omega
that's
hits
the marquee
him with
legit match.
V-triggers every time.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's the expression, you're more trouble than you're worth.
Mm-hmm.
That comes to mind when thinking about CM Punk.
Yeah,
but
that is also a thing.
Yeah.
With the whole fake glass, though, there's two schools of thought here. They're like, I can't blame Punk for not wanting real glass being used.
Right, but the way he went about it probably rubbed Jack Perry the wrong way.
Yeah.
Like, basically, like, acting like it was his call about everything. Like,
right.
Being like, we don't do that on Saturdays. You want to use real glass, you can go,
you
to
go back
Wednesdays.
To, yeah, like, yeah, and that's...
Like, okay.
That's kind of not the way to do things. Since he's the veteran...
And he's supposedly the self-appointed locker room leader.
It's up to him. He has to come up to this young talent and say, Jack, you have a minute?
Yeah.
You're a better wrestler than me? I don't want you on my show.
Well, like, he should be saying, you know, it's been my experience, you know, and there's just... Tact.
It's not, or it's like, it's
there's
like,
a way of doing things.
Yeah, he could have just been like, look, the whole real glass thing isn't necessary.
Yeah,
like,
we don't want anyone hurt.
Like, we can do this with sugar glass. It's like, it's fine. But
right. But to come across like that, like Dutch Mantel,
like,
said,
obviously something he said rubbed Jack Perry the wrong way.
And like I said in the chat too, it's like Jack Perry's been wrestling in GCW before he got signed, and his dad was at every show.
Yeah,
I think he's fine.
He's probably good with glass. Yeah,
yeah.
But all it takes though is that one errant charred piece to rip open your arm and all that. And before you know it, you're dying on the way to the hospital.
Yeah. That one main artery in your arm. Yeah.
Yeah, like
the armpit,
That's all it takes. So
back to the whole before he got canceled G Raver thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, scary.
Yeah. So more and more AEW is becoming what WCW was. The inmates are running the asylum.
Yeah.
And
Tony Khan needs to grow a pair and tell Punk to just like learn his place and just shut the fuck up.
I saw a great meme the other day. It was the Yeti coming out. It was like WCW 96 or whatever it was. And then from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre stupid match the other day.
Oh, yeah.
It was like WCW
2023.
Yeah. That was. Okay, I will say about that match, it didn't need to happen, but I'm happy that the money that they made
raised like $100,000
went to the what was it? The we went to the charity for the
something.
Fuck, yeah,
yeah.
It was, for,
it,
went to a
it was for a good cause. Yeah. I sound like an idiot not knowing where it went to, but
okay.
It helped victims of fires. And yeah,
well, that's good. That's good. And as a horror film fan, I know we weren't planning on discussing that, but the Texas Chainsaw Massacre match, I was like, oh shit, what are they gonna do? But then when you know I see what's going on, and it's like, oh, it's for a video game.
Yeah.
Oh okay.
Yeah, the video game came out that day, but you know what? The Texas Chainsaw Massacre fan in me, being that this episode of Dynamite was on August 16th, it's like you could have had it 3 days later on August 19th. I know it took place. I know Texas Chainsaw took place on August 18th, but it took place overnight.
And
technically, the movie ended on August 19th. So if they would have had it on Collision on August 19th,
that would have
been really cool.
Right.
Or even on Rampage on August 18th.
Yeah.
You know, like,
right.
Yeah.
But I guess more people are watching Dynamite.
I guess, yeah, that one has the most ratings out of any of the shows,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact mm-hmm. that CM Punk is apparently the big draw of the company. But, you know, when you're going up against SummerSlam... Whoops.
Oopsie.
And then this Saturday going up against Payback, again, going to be, I'll be being clear, Collision has not been on in Canada on TSN in over a month.
Oh, okay.
I don't know
That's
why.
That's probably CM Punk's fault.
Oh, is it? Like the first like three or four episodes were on here, but.
Oh, it's airing in Canada where Kenny Omega's from? Yeah. Canada's not allowed at Collision.
Yeah. But. Like, yeah, I don't know if there's, like, some playoffs going on that I'm unaware of that has it preempted, but I guess this is why...
I can't think of anything.
This is why in America wrestling isn't on sports networks. It's on just television networks, so...
Yeah. Well, no, okay. AEW's on TSN up here, which is a sports thing, but they've got, like, five channels.
Yeah, but
so
somehow they
some...
can't find...
Yeah,
all five of them to
if
show it live.
Even if there's a Canadian Football League game going on, a Major League Soccer game going on, you know, Vancouver or Toronto.
Sometimes it's the same thing on like three of the
channels. Three of them, yeah. So that tells me they're looking for programming.
Yeah,
especially since
the
Sportsnet.
Quick, keep going.
Okay,
especially since Sportsnet has the Blue Jays.
Yep.
Okay, which that's they play almost. They play 160 some games,
and they have WWE.
And they have, yeah. So yeah, like TSN is looking for something to show.
Yeah,
you know,
you'd think they could show. They were showing Rampage for a little while too, but now both of those shows haven't even been on. Like I look at my recorded shows on a Sunday, and I'm just like, hey, I'll start watching these, and it's like, oh, they're not there. They didn't record because they weren't on. I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, I know I could probably watch them on their website, on their app, but I don't want to have to do that.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's just, I don't know.
I have to watch it live because they don't, like, put the episode up to rewatch after it's live for, like, a week. So, yeah. So, it's like, you're expecting me to set aside 2 hours on a Saturday night?
See, that's
I never intended to watch Collision live. I always wanted to just pre-record it and just watch it the next day,
right?
Just wake up in bed in the morning and just go, yeah, there we go, wrestling.
right. And is anyone watching Collision in, like, that's got to be
less than half a million people are, apparently.
Okay, that's just a terrible time.
Yeah. Well, that's most weeks. Like, there's been some weeks where they've gotten, like, 700-800, which is fine. Like, that's on average what Dynamite does. But, but when you take the Canadian audience away, that must take a good chunk of that away. Like, at least a couple hundred thousand. So,
Yeah. No, and it's not just my preference of just not wanting to watch outside of a pay-per-view. You know, I just don't want to watch a regular wrestling program on a Friday or Saturday night. I'm doing other things.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
hanging out with buddies or hanging out with or going to a show.
Going to a show.
So, yeah.
Taking my wife to the movies or something like
that. Yeah.
We're doing other things.
Priorities.
Weeknights, you know, are a great night. Sunday night is a great night.
Yeah.
But
Friday, Saturday?
Friday, yeah.
Like, Just, well, I only watch SmackDown because, like, I work on Saturdays, so I don't really go out Fridays. Oh, so, okay. Yeah, so I can stay in and watch SmackDown and then go to bed.
Which, okay, I do have to take a bit of this back because this past Friday,
yeah,
I did find myself watching SmackDown. Now, yeah,
for good reason.
Special reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like, I had found out, okay, on tonight's SmackDown, tributes to Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think maybe I'm going to,
tune into
that, which for the most part, I thought they did a really good job.
WWE always does a really good job with tribute packages.
Right.
Like, it sucks that it has to be a thing, but
mm-hmm.
like, we'll get to that in the turnbuckle talk.
Right.
But,
Right.
Yeah, we still got one more thing to talk about.
One more thing to talk about before we get to our turnbuckle talk. And yeah. I think we're going to give it another 10 seconds as Ducky is now joining us.
Bottom line is CM Punk seems to be the cause of all the drama backstage at AEW.
It's seeming that way. Yeah. It's seeming that way. Another really huge thing was the retirement?
Question mark?
Quote unquote, of one Edge.
Yeah.
You know, which they kind of, WWF, WWE, they sent him out with a bang. I thought yeah. they did, how he went out was fantastic.
Yeah, like he wrestled in Toronto on an episode of SmackDown. I'm not convinced it was his retirement match, though. Like,
mm-hmm.
something about it just, like, they never, like, hyped it up that way.
Well, when he said that in his inbox he has a contract extension.
Yeah, just sitting there waiting for him. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, it might be the last time he wrestles in Toronto, but I can't see his last match ever being on just our episode of SmackDown. Like,
even maybe Mania next year?
Maybe. Like, Edge seems like the kind of guy that would, like, want to go out on his back, and being that he won that match in Toronto mm-hmm. against Sheamus, it's, yeah, like, it definitely, like, they were kind of, like, threw some things in there, because Beth Phoenix was in the audience, and
his kids,
and his trainer, but, I don't know, like, they, like, his speech after the match was, like, off air, so if they were gonna... Right. If they were going to do a retirement angle, they would have done that definitely on air. Because, like, as far as we know, this was just celebrating 25 years of Edge in WWE.
So, yeah. Okay.
You know, minus that 9 years where he had to retire. But right. We don't count that, you know.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, so technically it was 16 years. But anyway.
But with all of that and him, that's his last match and the question mark as to what's... Did you have it in the back of your head? Him maybe showing up at Wembley?
Well, he did say that his contract doesn't officially... that was the last match on his contract, but it wasn't... His contract didn't expire until September. So, no,
oh.
I didn't...
Oh, okay.
I didn't think that he would show up at Wembley,
there
but...
was a great meme with that. Someone did a real good job of photoshopping Edge and fireworks in Wembley in the entrance ramp.
Oh, yeah?
And a lot of people are stupid.
They thought it was real.
Holy shit, I know. I didn't. If I would have known, I would have paid the $50. I'm like, you're dumb.
Yeah.
He's not there.
No, it's hard to picture Edge anywhere but the WWE. Like,
right.
being that he's been there for, like, his entire career, minus, like, before he was Edge when he was.
Adam Impact
or Sexton Hardcastle.
Yeah. Oh shit. Yeah. I forget about that.
Yeah.
He really wasn't in the indies very long.
I think he was compared to a lot. Yeah, and he was on. I think he was on an episode of WCW Saturday Night.
Right.
Yeah, but he was never. I don't think he was ever like a fully contracted WCW.
Oh
wrestler.
No, he was just.
But then he
talent.
Showed up as Edge, just this tortured soul who runs around the streets of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You think you know me. Etc.
The enigmatic Edge.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I thought those vignettes were cool. And, like, you know me, I have a mostly hate-love relationship with the WWF. But
yeah.
No.
Like, some of the stuff, like, they did with Edge was just okay.
Yeah.
This is one of the guys I'm tuning in for.
Yeah. But on the other hand, Christian is in AEW.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Hardy Boys are in AEW. Right. So a lot of his best matches and most memorable matches of his career have involved the Hardys guys, and Christian.
Yeah.
Like whether it was singles matches or him and Christian teaming up to take on the Hardys, or
I mean, would I and also one the more Dudleys. Edge Christian Hardys match, yes.
It wouldn't be anything like it spectacular. Was 20 years ago. No, yeah. It wouldn't be a WrestleMania 17 showcase, no. But it would definitely be something to see. To see,
even if it's shit, it'll be good.
Yeah, just to see Matt and Jeff Hardy taking on Christian Cage and I guess Adam. Well, they wouldn't call him
Christian
Adam.
Cage and Corner.
Adam Elite. Adam Elite. can't call him Adam. Can't call him Adam Impact. That's already another company.
Yeah, yeah.
It's versus Christian Cage and Ledge.
I would just call him Adam Copeland.
Yeah,
Adam Edgeland.
No.
That's cool, but yeah, I don't think legally.
The Corner is all we.
I think. Yeah. I would really like to see him in AEW, you know.
Yeah, it would be something for him to show up there in general. Like that, the crowd would pop huge, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's
fantasy booking right now.
It would be a little too to see him wrestle his last match not as Edge would be weird.
The Edge.
Yeah. The Edge. No, that's taken too.
Yeah.
Let's try to combine Adam and Edge. It'll be like ADG Edge. Edge. ADG.
I don't think it's working.
No. Edge.
Edge.
Edge. Oh, now that's Bush League indie wrestling.
Bush
League. Right,
Hedge
there.
Bush.
Hedge, yeah. Oh.
You think you mow me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Next. But if this is it.
No, he had a great match against Sheamus. If that was his last match, I kind of wish he would have gone out on his back, but I get it. They needed the Toronto crowd to pop. But
or even probably Sheamus was even like, you're beating me.
Yeah. He's like, nah, fella.
Yeah, because I assume
I'll buy the Guinness.
They're buddies in real life.
Oh, they're best friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then that's understandable.
Yeah, when Edge was retired still, him and Sheamus would like work out together all the time. And like
Sheamus is the one who helped him
get back into shape for ring shape. Okay. So yeah.
Well, that's excellent. Right on. Well, normally we really enjoy our turnbuckle talk.
Normally, yeah.
Segment, but unfortunately, we gotta put on our big boy pants here and discuss some.
We're all wearing shorts.
Some stuff that we might not necessarily. We wish we were talking about these individuals under better circumstances.
One of which I wish I would be talking about his career for another 10, 15 years.
At least. But yeah, because it was definitely tragically cut short. Terry Funk. Okay.
What can you say that hasn't already been
that
said?
Hasn't already been middle-aged and crazy. Yeah. You know, and he's how many years and how many retirements has he?
Like 101?
Him or Ric Flair were like the kings of the fake retirements. Or like
Him, Flair, and Onita have been retiring every month since the 90s.
Yeah.
Yep.
True enough. What was
they're gonna retire forever?
Retire forever. Do you guys have any recollection of your first discovering Terry Funk?
I discovered Terry Funk when he was Chainsaw Charlie in the WWF. Yeah.
Okay.
And when he was teaming with Cactus Jack. But that's like at WrestleMania 14, that's where I first saw him. Was those two were taking on the New Age Outlaws in a Dumpster Rules tag team match for the tag team championships. And then Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack won that match. And then the next night on Raw, the New Age Outlaws won them back and then joined Degeneration X.
And then pushed them off the the stage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good God, there's people in there.
Did you know who Chainsaw Charlie was?
At the time, no. But
just like, it's a crazy Texan dude.
Yeah. But at I eventually learned about Terry Funk down the line and how he was this like super crazy hardcore wrestler, and he was extreme before ECW was even a thing. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, I learned about the Funks, and yeah, and then at one point Terry Funk was in WCW in their like twilight years, and he won the WCW Hardcore Championship.
And he was kicked by a horse.
Yes, yes, he was. He was sense. Kicked by a horse live on pay per view.
And all he said was like, "Ah, fuck!" And then he threw something at it.
That's always a great idea to throw something at a horse. You know?
Yeah, there's
after
there's,
it kicks.
He yeah, an animal you want to piss off. Okay, but he's a legit rancher.
Yeah, I
like,
know.
He's a legit cowboy.
Yep.
He's also the one who brought.
He's probably, it probably he's wasn't his first time getting kicked by a horse.
Right.
So. He's also the one who brought Onita to America.
Oh yeah,
yeah, I guess so. Eh?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, dude? Do you remember your
randomly
first?
Randomly saw a YouTube video of him and Onita, that exploding one in Japan.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck is this?
Also, as a 14-year-old boy, I got a kick out of his Funk You t-shirt.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I still do. It's
yeah,
great.
Actually.
I still need to get one on pro wrestling tees because they're there.
Yeah.
Okay. This just the way the three of us are,
yeah,
and all of our different experiences and all of our preferences in pro wrestling, this just figures that's how you would discover Terry Funk. That's how you would discover Terry Funk.
Of course, you discovered him in the NWA.
And I discovered Terry Funk, okay, first through the Aftermags.
Okay, of course.
Okay. But the first time that I had seen him was...
when he had
like,
an afro.
When I was able to see him on TV and then eventually live shortly after was the National Expansion.
Okay.
It was post-WrestleMania 2.
Yeah.
And then you said he threatened you with a branding.
That was going to be one of my highlights. One of my Terry Funk's highlights. I'll never...
Was it on fire?
No.
Then it's lame.
Teenage Snowy will never forget that. And it was okay. It was the Funks because Dory Funk Jr.
Yep.
Who still wrestles a match a year and it's terrifying.
He just
hobbles.
Well,
the Funks don't know how to retire.
No,
yeah,
they don't.
Yeah. Terry and Dory were in... Like Vince brought them in after the National Expansion and all that. I was enjoying, like, I didn't buy Hulkamania. I didn't buy Hogan. I didn't buy a lot of the circus atmosphere that the National Expansion created. I didn't like Hillbilly Jim. I didn't like, you know. They did have a few wrestlers that really caught my attention. Okay. The Funks were one. Okay, they were probably the best reason. The British Bulldogs were another. Greg the Hammer Valentine was another as well. So that was one of the reasons I actually went to a WWF event, you know, post-WrestleMania 2, because the main event was the Junkyard Dog versus Terry Funk. Okay, well, this is really cool. Right on, right on. And what you were alluded to is I was at ringside, 15 years old. I was heckling Funk, you know, and he came up to ringside and he had that branding iron and he gave me the, like, he was going to hit me. And I knew he wasn't going to because there's a thing called lawsuits and all that.
Did he hit you with a pile driver?
Pile driver.
But when it was done.
Oh, here's that pile driver.
When all was said and done, I was kind of like, oh, yeah. Terry Funk just threatened to hit me with his branding iron. this is cool. So,
and then he hit the grandmother beside you with the branding iron.
Yeah.
She was a plant.
Well, that's one of those wrestling tropes. So I'm surprised we never, or maybe we did. I don't recall. But every wrestling back in the territory days, there was always that little old lady ringside. Just yelling and screaming and swinging her cane.
Remember the old
at
WPW shows at the Sherby, at the Sherbrooke? They would have a plant old lady.
Oh, okay.
And then the good guy would bring the heel up to her, and she would whack him with the cane.
Okay, well, then that's great. The plant, yeah.
Because... Or he would take her cane and push her over.
Because there's so many times the little old lady would want to give her cane to the face to use on the heel, but he wouldn't take it. You know, like, that was just one of those things and all that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What really impressed me about Funk, okay, is his ECW days.
Yeah.
Because he was getting up there.
Or yeah. He didn't even start this deathmatch stuff until he was 50.
Yeah.
he was rough and tumble. Like, him and Jerry Lawler had some bloodbaths.
Well, on Raw last night, they mentioned the empty arena match with him and Lawler.
Yeah. I was just about to get to that. Yeah, like that was...
And they mentioned that on SmackDown, too. Like, they played the same video packages they played on Friday.
I don't know. Thank goodness that was at least on YouTube at some point. It's still there?
I watched it the other day.
Good, because that's one of those... You know, when you make a list of the 100 greatest matches of all time, like, that's got to be on there. Mm-hmm. You know, again, if it's not, then... You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Terry started this hardcore shit at like 45.
Yeah, like there's just...
I'm going to go blow up now.
Yeah, and for him to be doing the stuff in ECW that he did.
Even that,
you know,
King of the Deathmatch 95, Kawasaki Stadium with Nick.
Yeah.
And they're exploding barbed wire where they both got second degree burns in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
You guys ever seen... Funk Live, was he ever...
No, never got the opportunity. No,
he wasn't...
He was a day older than dirt
he
when
is.
I started going
he
to
was,
wrestling
yes,
shows.
Yeah, he was... Well, he was getting old when I was young, so that's...
Yeah, being that I was 12 when I first discovered it was Chainsaw Charlie, or... Okay. Yeah, around,
he was probably
14,
54.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if maybe he might have come back, like, as Chainsaw Charlie, and there was a tag team match at a house show here.
First house show I ever went to was in 99, and he was nowhere near that one. I don't think he was even in the company anymore. So I think he was in WCW at that point.
I think the first house show I ever went to was the one time WCW had a house show here.
Oh, yeah. Like in 2000?
Yeah.
Yeah, the old one at the barn.
Yeah. And then it was like, Hogan's supposed to be here. Sting's supposed to be here. And the main event was Sid Vicious versus Lex Luger.
Yeah, it was wasn't it supposed to be Sting versus Vampiro?
Yeah. Because of that whole angle that was going on?
Yeah.
And neither of them showed up?
Well, that just about says it all about the state of the company at the time, doesn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
If you want a reason to, you know, just because it's a kick-ass show, but Vampiro is now in, he's managing La Rebellion in the NWA. So there's something to tune into. But I guess maybe a little more your guys' wheelhouse is Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
Wyndham Rotunda, which I thought, okay, is it, it's Rotunda.
Rotunda, yeah.
Okay, see, that gets me mixed up because.
That gnaws you?
Well, it's always been a thing because when his dad was wrestling, Mike Rotunda, like, he went by Rotunda everywhere, like in the territories in Florida, when him and Barry Windham were the U.S. Express in the WWF.
Yeah, I suppose they had to change. Everyone had to change their last name up a little bit, even if they were trying to use a variation of their real name. It's like Ric Flair's real name is Richard Fleer. The Steiners are actually Rick Steiner. Rick Steiner and Scott Rick Steiner.
Rex Steiner. Every once in a while, though, on, you know, the television bumpers, okay, it would be Mike Rotunda.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't think anything of it because, okay, someone made a goof. You know, someone made a mistake and, you know, Rotunda.
Someone got fired.
Well,
yeah, someone got fired for that blunder.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a lot of controversy there. all that, so... So, yeah, that was always a thing. Okay, and I had no idea that Bray Wyatt was... I didn't know that... okay, that's Barry Windham's...
Nephew.
So Mike Rotunda was married to Barry's sister, I guess.
Yes, I believe that's right.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, I'm only recently, like, you know, just the last couple of years, have I really, I don't even want to totally say embraced, you know, the internet community or anything. Like, I still like the idea of being in the dark about things.
Yeah.
But at this day and age, you can't help but learn things. I never really learned this, you know?
No, like, and it's like, Bray Wyatt was so original. It's like, he was nothing like his father's characters at all.
At all, or his grandfather's.
Like, yeah. Like, he had such a creative mind. He took, like, stuff that was going on in his head, and he put it into, like, he made it a reality. And, like, he did his own thing. He didn't try to be IRS 2.0. So.
Thank God.
Yeah. Even though I'm sure Vince would have loved that. But.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the accountant or something. I don't know. Like.
Yeah. 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 Oh, well, yeah. What they could have done. Yeah. Call him something stupid like that. And he's managed by IRS. He's the new. The intern or something, the new IRS intern and all that. It's like, imagine, like, I couldn't imagine pro wrestling, like, no Bray Wyatt in pro wrestling.
Yeah, okay. Like, Bray Wyatt kind of started to become a thing when I was taking a break from wrestling.
Okay.
And when I came back into it, he was one of the most standout characters I had ever seen, like especially in the modern product. Like, just, I don't know, like he started off, like, in the original version of NXT, like the game show version, as Husky Harris. That was his whole thing, which was never amounted to anything,
right?
And then he went back to FCW and he started to create this character that would eventually become Bray Wyatt, where he wore Hawaiian shirts. He had a silver tongue, and he was like this perfect combination of Max Cady from Cape Fear and Charles Manson. And he had these big, like, corn-fed colossuses that would do his bidding for him that were his family members, even though they weren't actually, like, family. Like, he was these two guys that he had essentially brainwashed into joining his cult and doing his bidding. And just his promos made no sense whatsoever, but you were hanging on every single word that he said.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like, yes. And if Wyatt himself, if someone would have said to me, well, we need this, we have these wrestlers here. We need someone to come up with something. Get Rob Zombie on the phone.
Yeah.
Okay. Come up with something for these guys. You could all of, like, what were they called? The Wyatt family. You could have taken them and slapped them, you know, into a Rob Zombie movie.
Well, you know, funny enough, because, like, the family from The Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses was called the Firefly family.
Right.
And, yeah.
And look, yeah.
Yeah, so you got Bray Wyatt with his fireflies.
with his fireflies.
At least Vince didn't make a Godwins 2.0.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh.
As much as I'm sure he wanted to.
Yeah.
But no, Bray Wyatt was, like, even though he lost a lot of his major feuds, his, like him being hailed as the next Undertaker, I was just like, yes, I can totally see this guy being that person. And, like, when he was doing the cult leader thing with the Wyatt family, I could totally see it, because that was, like, his Ministry of Darkness in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but then eventually the Wyatt family broke up and he was still kind of doing that same music, same thing with the lantern coming out, and his attire was a bit different, and he was still doing the promos where he was, like, rambling, speaking sweet nothings and what have you. And then he got injured in a car accident and he had to go away for a while. Comes back completely reinventing himself as Bray Wyatt, this children's TV presenter in the Firefly Funhouse with all of these puppets that were, like, representations of his former gimmicks.
Right.
And I was just like, and I was in awe of it. I was just, like, looking at it, the entire time. And it was like, it was the most cornball thing I had ever seen on wrestling television in my entire life. Like the sound effects, it was like Pee-wee's Playhouse, but like there was something a little bit off about it.
A little bit twisted.
And then just like, and when he did that little sign off thing where he would say, "And remember my fireflies, I will always light the way, but all you have to do is let me in." And then he would like, when as soon as he would say "let me in," he would, his demeanor would just change.
Right.
And
you heard like the old white, like a
yeah.
And then the camera would come.
Yeah. But no, but then like there was something unsettling about the way he would say it. And this went on for like 4 weeks. And then he's like, "I'm finally ready to reveal my secret." And then it ended up being this demonic clown thing. I don't even know what you would call it, but I was in awe of the whole thing. And that's what ended up being The Fiend. And I loved The Fiend so fucking much. Like, The Fiend was a horror villain come to life. Mm-hmm. And when The Fiend would come into the arena, they would do like the powering down thing, that like that sound effect and the lights going out in sections of the arena every time, every single time I would get chills. And then when he would emerge with like those sporadic spotlights panning across him where you could barely see him but you knew he was there,
yeah, right.
And that creepy music, I was just like, oh, they better do something great with this. And
with the Code Orange rendition of his theme,
yeah, oh, like that was another, yeah, Code Orange did two of Bray Wyatt's themes,
yeah,
in the end. But yeah, like the Fiend's theme song just ended up being like a heavy hardcore version of the Bray Wyatt cult leader theme song, yep, which I thought was cool. And like his debut match and his entrance against Finn Balor at SummerSlam in 2019, if you can believe that, 4 years ago, was when we first saw The Fiend. Yeah, it was perfection, the way it was executed and everything, but Vince had to Vince it up. Like, they made him Universal Champion, eventually, but...
And then they made him lose to Goldberg in 2 minutes.
Yeah, and then also he had, like, the worst Hell in a Cell match of all time. But that was... Yep. Not slighting Bray Wyatt for this. He did what he had to, but... Yeah, just the way that was all booked was just... Not the best, but...
No, thanks, Vince.
But... And then during the pandemic, he actually got... If anything, I think that benefited the Fiend character for what it could do with, mm-hmm, like the editing, the way they could edit and the special
Randy
effects.
Randy Orton setting him on fire.
Yeah, well, okay, well, that could have been done a bit better because they could have found a dummy that was looked a little bit more like him and not just like a pile of rags. But
or just left it at the part where he was actually set on fire with the leather jacket on.
Yeah, maybe, but
have him run to the back. Match is over.
Yeah. Well, like during the pandemic, he was able to bring back the cult leader character for a little bit,
mm-hmm,
and then he had that feud with Braun Strowman where he was cult leader Bray, and then he was Firefly Funhouse Bray. Then Strowman beat him. Then he was cult leader Bray, and then he brought back the Fiend.
And
after
then they
that.
Had that swamp.
And then they had the swamp fight, but then the Fiend came back, and then they had their SummerSlam match where he won the Universal title again, but then Roman Reigns came back. And then, well...
Yeah, here we are.
A week later, Roman Reigns won the Universal title from them in a triple threat match, and, well, he's still a Universal Champion 1,000 some days later. Yeah. But, after WrestleMania, when Randy Orton defeated The Fiend, that was, as Bray Wyatt said, that was the end of The Fiend. That was, like... The Fiend has officially been vanquished, as it were, as a horror movie villain. I personally think there was so much more they could have done with it. At least we got the Firefly Funhouse match, though, at WrestleMania 36. That was nothing if not entertaining as hell. And you could tell that was a 100% Bray Wyatt creation, too. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, if there's one thing that I'm glad about the pandemic, it's that we got that cinematic match.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, the whole, like... The aura of The Fiend will always, like, stick out to me. Just the way that mask looked and that Tom Savini's studios helped create it,
That's
too.
That's what I was... Yeah. As soon as you were done making your point, yeah. I was going to bring that up. And I didn't know this until just recently.
Just after he passed.
Saw these pictures of Bray Wyatt with the great Tom Savini.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah. That makes so much sense because, number one, Vince can afford Savini.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's and why he's the best.
That's why the mask had so much detail to it. Right. And why it looks so horrifying.
Like, you want... Okay. CM Punk can say he's the best in the world, but okay, Savini can say, you know, with his reputation and how many years? It's 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been creating these horror film masterpieces and the effects and all that. And I had the good fortune of meeting Tom Savini.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. A convention in Toronto many, many years ago.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That was that was exciting to see.
Yeah, but then after that whole story with Randy Orton wrapped up, Bray Wyatt kind of went away for a little while, and then he got released from his contract. Yeah.
Yeah, there was it's like he was kind of, he wanted to go, or he wasn't happy with his...
Well, it's because he was still dealing with the death of Brody.
Oh, okay.
Brody Lee, because they were very close friends in real life, like outside of being a part of the Wyatt family together.
Mm-hmm.
And his... Brody Lee's death really hit Bray Wyatt hard. Like, he went through a lot when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so he was away from wrestling entirely for a whole year. There's speculation that he was going to come into AEW and take over the Dark Order for Brody.
That would have been cool.
Well, I don't know if Bray Wyatt would have worked in an AEW environment, though. Like, I feel like WWE is the only, like, wrestling company where he could really work and pull off the whole
mm-hmm.
supernatural thing mm-hmm. really well. Because AEW, as much as I love AEW, doesn't really fit their whole
presentation. The Dark Order was a shell of what it was once was. It's now, you know, it became comedy.
Yeah,
after Brody,
we just have to protect Eric Rowan at all costs.
Yeah,
yeah,
and Braun Strowman.
Yeah,
but yeah, and then after he was gone for the company for the better part of a year, these QR codes started showing up in random places. This is after Vince McMahon was retired, of course. So these random QR codes kept showing up in random places just in the background of interviews. And when you scan the QR codes, it brought you to this page called the White Rabbit. And White Rabbit was spelled in such a way that it was actually an anagram of Bray Wyatt. So, and then at live events during commercial breaks, they would play an a cappella version of the Jefferson Airplane song.
That was cool.
Yeah. And, like, leading to his return. And then eventually at Extreme Rules, after the main event ended, all the lights go down. Everybody has their phones out for the Fireflies. And just Bray Wyatt's voice just comes over the PA saying, "He's got the whole world in his hands." And then, like, little by little, we start seeing, like, life-size versions of the puppets from the Firefly Funhouse just scattered across the arena. They looked horrifying. And then we saw the Fiend in there, too, which wasn't actually Bray Wyatt in the Fiend costume, but still. And then we saw the burnt Fiend mask just sitting on top of the announce table. And
then, Michael Cole was like, "Oh, shit!"
Yeah. And then they showed, like, the Firefly Funhouse completely abandoned, just with cobwebs everywhere, and then this new face that we'd never seen before, like, this new mask appeared on the TV, just telling us to revel in what you are.
Yeah, the Uncle Howdy.
Which ended up being Uncle Howdy. And then it turned, got back into the arena, and there was this doorway set up at the entryway with light shining through it. It busts open, and then you just see Wyatt just walk out with the lamp. He takes the mask off, and the crowd just goes mental. Because he's back, and we're just like, oh my god.
I still would have loved, with the tribute on SmackDown, if it would have ended with, well, Uncle Howdy is clearly Bo, his brother.
Yeah.
If Bo would have come out with the lantern one last time and blew it out.
Yeah, that would have been cool, but like the Uncle Howdy thing, it was getting somewhere, but it was taking a while, and then he had his feud with LA Knight at the Royal Rumble, which ended at the Royal Rumble when they had their match, which was that Mountain Dew pitch black match, but which ended up being Bray's last match ever. Because like shortly after that, they were going to start that feud with Lashley going into WrestleMania, but then reports came around that he was diagnosed with an undisclosed illness, which until after his death wasn't revealed that he had caught COVID, got it real bad, and it he had a pre-existing heart condition, and having COVID only made it worse.
Right.
So after he was on the mend from COVID, he still had these heart issues, and yeah, apparently, like they said he was on the mend and he was about to return, and then like a week later, the reports come out that he passed away.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So he was 36 years old, and he died in his sleep of a heart attack.
He said to his wife he was going down for a nap, didn't put his respirator thing on, and just...
His defibrillator.
Yep.
It was in his car. They found it in his car. So, he told his girlfriend or his wife or whatever that he was going down for a nap, and then his alarm went off, and it went off for, like, a good while, and he...
Went off for, like, an hour.
Yeah, it didn't turn on. He didn't turn it off, and then she went into his bedroom, and...
Blue.
He was blue, and they couldn't resuscitate him.
Wow. Yeah. Right. Once the idea of, you know, it was somehow COVID related, as I'm scrolling through Facebook, I saw something. I never paid it any mind, but it was someone was using it like because it was an anti-jab.
Yeah.
Someone was saying it was the vaccine. Someone was saying it was the vaccine that killed him. Or something.
And I'm like, okay. You should dig a little further.
Yeah.
And, what's that expression on the internet? Research? Do your research?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you should kind of do that. And so I just never paid it any mind. And I just thought it was sick when people use someone's death to further their political agenda. Their narrative,
yeah.
Which, what do you get out of it?
Self-satisfaction.
Yep. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. But I'm not going to go into this too much because I'll go on all night. And we have been going on all night, so we kind of got
to... Yeah, we got a wrapper.
But I just got to say that...
It sucks.
Yeah. Like, I was looking forward to him coming back after hearing reports that he was on the mend, and I was just like, well, cool. I've been waiting for months since February, since he's been gone, just to see those lights flicker again for him to come back. But
well, even like the weird thing at Raw here,
there was like the Firefly Funhouse puppets were like placed across the arena or something.
Well, there was like something, and I took a photo of it and I sent it to you.
Yeah,
I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, I was waiting for him to return.
And something posted on the wall, and I'm like,
yeah,
pray. Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then...
Not now, unfortunately.
No, it's never going to happen. Nope. But I will say that he was one of the most creative minds that professional wrestling has ever seen.
I still want to know what Undertaker said to him.
I don't think that's something we're ever going to know now.
Nope. No. That sucked. Was like, pass the torch.
Yeah, but... He gave us so much of his... creativity and he had still so much to give us, and
it's too bad.
He gave us like 20 years.
Was it even that long?
It was 20 because FCW 2009 was his first promo.
Yeah.
When Florida Championship Florida Championship Wrestling is still a thing.
It's just not
developmental anymore.
Okay. Yeah, because that became NXT inevitably. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
time flies.
For someone that's like, he was a year younger than me, and for him to die that way, it's scary. And it's like, it's unfortunate. For his kids and his wife, too. And
Yeah. So I think it's just about time to bring this crazy train into the station.
And I do also just want to say that, like, during his tribute video on SmackDown at the beginning of the show, when it showed his... like all of his career highlights going through everything. Yeah. I got a bit misty eyed, and I haven't done that for a wrestler probably since Eddie Guerrero. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You can't help but get the lump in the throat. Yep.
Yeah. Like Terry Funk. Yes. It's unfortunate that he passed away, but he lived a full life. Like, probably wasn't the most.
He lived four full lives.
Yeah. He probably wasn't the most comfortable life in the world because he took his injuries, like a lot of them, but lived with them. But yeah, for Bray Wyatt to just succumb to that at such a young age, and like, I was just looking so forward to where everything that he was doing was going to go. And I hope somehow they can carry on his legacy, like with Bo Dallas potentially, but it's just Sucks to know we're never going to see him again. Right, I'm never going to hear that voice do a promo again.
And like, it was cool on Raw last night too, where at one point after they did the promo they aired on SmackDown, they had his the cult theme playing in the chair.
Yeah, having his wheel or having his wheel his rocking his chair.
Rocking chair.
Yeah, just sitting there rocking by itself, and then the spotlight just
but
focused
Randy
on it.
Randy destroyed.
No, you can't destroy that. No, and then the lantern at the end of SmackDown after the last match, the lantern that was just sitting in the middle of the ring with the mist surrounding it.
The picture of Bray
on the screen, making it look like he was somehow standing in the ring. It was a lot.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm getting emotional now thinking about it.
Yeah, of course. So how can people get a hold of us?
Well,
if you can do that right now.
They can get a hold of us on Facebook at facebook.com/WrestlingNightInCanada or on Instagram at WrestlingNightInCanada.
And once again, Wrestling Night in Canada is proud members of the Shining Wizards Network, shiningwizardsnetwork.com. Go and check us out there. Not only are we on there, it's basically the network is host to a bunch of great predominantly pro wrestling podcasts, but if you haven't had enough of your cool Uncle Snowy, you're going to want to check out Radioactive Metal, where my good buddy Aaron and I, we sit down every week and talk everything going on in the world of heavy metal. Always a good time.
Should play a little, maybe play a little Code Orange on on Radioactive Metal next time in honor of Bray Wyatt.
Let's see what we can do. In the meantime, and in between time, that's it. It's been another exciting episode of Wrestling Night in Canada. I'm Snowy White.
I'm Matt Copper.
I'm Dustin Maruka.
Signing off.
And we're from Winnipeg, you idiots. And also, if you want to find me, just follow the buzzards.